it's China. Oh, it's China.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, March 21st, 2024. This is your award-winning Gibonation Media Assassination, episode 1644.
This is No Agenda.
Exposing marketing mayhem and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where we noticed that Takara Fuji lost his first match and Apple's getting sued. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
And there it is. There it is. The Sumo Report. Everybody's smiling. Everybody's
people
happy.
People seem to want it.
Everybody's happy. But what about this Apple's getting sued business?
Haven't you heard that? Just broke this morning. Breaking.
Oh, yeah. Breaking, colon, all uppercase. Breaking! I love it when people post a screenshot of another social network with breaking!
Breaking.
Breaking. Breaking at this hour. Breaking! It's so crazy. It's like, it's not breaking. It's just a news report. It's just a headline.
It's what's funny is that Fox... The beginning of pretty much everybody's show, whoever it is.
Breaking news at this hour.
It's breaking. Something's breaking.
breaking. What is the news that's breaking? What is Apple getting sued over? Over their web browser?
Well, that would be a good idea.
Yeah, what is it?
The Justice Department's going after them for being a monopoly.
No.
Our government is going after one of our biggest companies for being a monopoly and ruining the smartphone business because their phones, I'm not kidding, kind of because their phone stinks.
What?
And it's too expensive.
Wait a minute. Is that the actual suit? It's like, your phone stinks, and it's too expensive.
Well, Garland came up and he gave I wish I had a clip of it because it just happened.
It's breaking. It's breaking.
Went in front of the podium and says that Apple is monopolizing the business. They're producing a lousy product. Pretty much is what he said.
Wow. They literally invented the category, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Well, yeah. That's what commies do.
But it's what happens when you're not coughing up enough dough.
Oh, that's what it is. Tim Collins Cook should know better. He knows better.
Although this may also be a ploy, it may be Tim Collins. Let's say he goes to the Justice Department and says, you know, it wouldn't be bad idea to sue us right now because we're predicament in China and they think we're just stooges for you guys. And
but that's not going to help their stock price, which is already somewhat suppressed, would you not say?
Yeah, it probably will not help the stock price.
Well, so that's what the algo told you today. What has everyone, what has your algo told you to worry about today? I've heard two. One is the squatters. Have you followed this? The squatters.
The squatter story is they're making this into a big, massive news story. I don't think I have any clips on it. But yeah, squatters.
Squatters. They're the illegal immigrants. I'm sorry, the newcomers.
Newcomers.
The newcomers are coming. Squatting. Are going to squat in your house. Now, most of the stories seem to be coming from New York and Chicago, where you probably can squat in somebody's house.
The big story, the story where there's two, three lines are going on. One is, of course, the TikTok video, which is I saw it, but I couldn't click because it's all in Spanish.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I look real. I'm like an angry brown man. I'm coming to sit in your house. I'm squatting.
And he had all these clues about how you can squat.
Yeah.
And then there was the arrest of some woman who tried to go into her own house.
In New York. That was New York.
In New York.
Yeah.
And they arrested her and left the squatters in place.
So in the Netherlands, squatters' rights have been a thing for as long as I've been when I went to the country in the beginning.
Also the UK.
Well, and they call them krakers in the Netherlands. Krakers. K-R-A-K-E-R-S. Krakers. Because they krak your house and they krak right in. And the only way to stop it, because there is a legal right. You have a legal right. If there's a house that is empty, and that means there's no bed, no table, no chairs, i.e. a house that someone's trying to sell usually, although you should stage it always, people, talk to your local real estate professional. Then they can go in there and they can just crack it and they can live there. So usually people pay Well, they used to pay, I think. Now they just say, hey, would you like to live in this mansion for 100 euros a month? And then they throw down a mattress and a table and some IKEA stuff and good to go. Then it's anti-crack. So that seems to be, it actually kind of works because you solve some housing problem for students who get a dynamite pad for a while and you keep the crackers out. But here in Texas, we have a different system. We just shoot you.
Yes. Texas has got the right idea.
Absolutely. But it's being played up on all the algos, everybody. And you know, this just shows how, and this is not, to me, this is not an organic thing. This is being jacked up. This is a TikTok algo being jacked. Either people who know how to do it or by TikTok themselves, for all I know. It's
I think it's people that know how to do it. We need to find these people.
Yeah, they should be jacking our stuff up.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Actually, I have some takes on that. I have some TikTok takes later on. But first, we need to go to the other algo that's getting everybody worried. And of course, we have a little supercut.
The latest now in the race for the White House and the incendiary speech from Donald Trump at a rally over the weekend with praise for the January 6th convicts, attacks on immigrants as subhuman, and a warning of a bloodbath for the country if he's defeated.
It's true that Trump started out by talking about cars, but listen again. He then explicitly says that will be the least of it.
So as you hear, he certainly did start off by talking about car makers and apparently a bloodbath if he's not elected for the whole car industry, but he stopped himself and then elaborated, saying, quote, that would be the least of it.
He knew what he was doing. We're not stupid.
It is clear what he meant. And one of Trump's sort of rhetorical gifts, if you will, is he speaks just vaguely enough and just circuitously enough that people can kind of read into different meanings. He allows himself a little wiggle room and a little out.
Americans aren't stupid.
We just have to win this election because he's even predicting a bloodbath. What does that mean? He's going to exact a bloodbath? There's something wrong here.
He was talking about a bloodbath. Sometimes a bloodbath means a bloodbath. And when he finishes by saying, and that's just going to be the least of it, seriously.
It's so phenomenal. Even after we warned them not to do this, they still went ahead and just did it. The media is so dishonest, they will even say, you know, I'm going to put this all in context for you for a minute, okay? Because people say, you've got to put it in context of what he said. Well, Jen Psaki is a spin meister of epic proportions in this.
Context, everyone, otherwise it's irresponsible. Well, if they want us to consider the full context, let's do just that. Because the full context is that Trump kicked off the same exact rally by saluting the people who were convicted for the deadly assault on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. All to the tune of the national anthem sung by a choir of imprisoned insurrectionists.
Yeah, they weren't actually, I don't think they actually been imprisoned as insurrectionists, but okay.
The full context is that some of the first words out of Trump's mouth last night, same rally, were thanking those rioters and calling them patriots. The full context is that he also said in this same rally, quote, if this election isn't won, I'm not sure that you'll ever have another election in this country.
Skipped a couple words there, too, but there's some weird carrier wave sound. I don't know what that is. It's probably in her voice.
The full context is that he went on to say some undocumented immigrants are, quote, not people. And of course, the full context is that this is much bigger than one single speech. This embrace of political violence.
Here we go.
This dehumanizing language. This is what Donald Trump has been preaching 4 years.
Oh, let's bring out some more of these truths.
In January, he warned that there will be, quote, bedlam in this country if his criminal prosecution derailed his campaign. Late last year, he echoed the dehumanizing language of Adolf Hitler, comparing his political opponents to vermin and saying immigrants are, quote, poisoning the blood of our country.
I love it how she tries to provide context around a false narrative with false narrative without context of other occasions. This is so meta.
Last month, he said there would be potential death and destruction if he was charged in the Manhattan criminal probe. And during his first term, he flat out refused to condemn the political violence at a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Lie.
Saying there were very fine people on both sides. In 2020, he reported...
There's an old cow she drug out of the canal.
...reportedly asked his defense secretary about shooting people who were protesting the death of George Floyd, saying, can't you just shoot them? Just shoot them in the legs or something.
Shoot them.
And of course, his very words inspired violence on January 6, 2021, when he told a crowd of his supporters to walk down to the Capitol and fight like hell because, quote, you'll never take back our country with weakness. Trust me, I could go on and on.
Yeah, you could.
We all know by now that Trump's allusions to political violence are not merely rhetorical. Oh. His supporters take them literally. That's part of the big problem here.
Yeah,
and he knows that too.
They're called voters.
So no, we did not miss the full context. This was not some meandering off-message comment. This is his message.
So she literally goes out of her way to not explain the context by taking other things out of context. It's unbelievable how dishonest. She will be struck by lightning.
Well, she should be not. Now, I have a supercut showing the other side of the equation.
Yes,
the same media people using bloodbath casually left and right in their own with their own narratives, not thinking twice about it.
We have to give credit to Rob Ducifer, Sir Ducifer. I think he put this together over at the InfoWars.
But as Politico.com reports tonight on the, quote, bloodbath at the RNC.
Headlines calling it a, quote, bloodbath.
A bloodbath. Not only is it going to be a bloodbath, but after they leave New Hampshire, it's a bloodbath on her home turf. That's really tough.
And Trump has left a lot of corpses in his wake. I mean, we can count the bodies
as part of the, quote, MAGA drive to take over Maricopa County. And the headline refers to it as an impending bloodbath.
Columnist Charles Blow has a new piece for the New York Times entitled A Biden Bloodbath.
2018 midterms, you can bet that they 100% are fearing a slaughter. In fact, the word bloodbath and massacre come up frequently.
The Republican Party will be destroyed. It's going to be a bloodbath.
There's going to be a bloodbath one way or the other.
Bloodbath for Bernie Sanders.
It's been a bloodbath. They're shaping up to be a bloodbath.
Now, this is all before 2022. This is amazing how many times the M5M has used the term bloodbath.
Head off a bloodbath in next year's crucial midterm.
Off-year elections are often a bloodbath.
This week's bloodbath for Democrats.
A bloodbath at the ballot box.
There could be a Republican bloodbath.
They'll talk about a bloodbath.
It's a bloodbath. I have to talk about you.
It's going to be a bloodbath all day long.
Is in for a bloodbath.
Hasn't been a bloodbath on the way down.
Donald Trump bloodbath.
Be a bloodbath.
Predicted to be a bloodbath. May not be the bloodbath.
It would be a bloodbath.
More of a bloodbath.
It's going to be a bloodbath in November.
Possible Biden bloodbath this November.
A bloodbath on Wall Street.
There's going to be a bloodbath
in Alabama into a bloodbath.
Obviously, there was a bloodbath.
It was a bloodbath. We're down 800 points.
This bloodbath at Department of Homeland Security.
And it's a bloodbath today.
There was going to be this bloodbath.
Election bloodbath.
It could be a bloodbath for them.
Bloodbath, possibly.
Bloodbath that went through with the Attorney General.
Bloodbath 99 days out.
The bloodbath is going to look like.
Presided over a bloodbath in the diplomatic corps.
Salute in my opinion, bloodbath. The Democrats
are calling it a ticket sales turned into a bloodbath.
All right, let's go to a serious journalist who should know better. I'm quite sure that we can get a little bit of sanity out of Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC. Come on, Larry.
Sure.
Larry, save the day.
Today, the Biden-Harris campaign said Donald Trump has shown us who he is time and time again and released this video.
He's literally playing a Democrat Party ad on his show.
Yeah, of course he is.
Don't get elected. It's going to be a bloodbath, and it's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Jews will not replace us.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Are you willing to condemn white supremacists and militia groups from the
left? Stand back and stand by.
Please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
There'd be a lot of pardons and commutations of January 6th defendants.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell your supporters now, no matter what, no violence. And it's going to be a bloodbath.
It's going to be a bloodbath. Lawrence, tag it.
Perhaps some of you are feeling fear tonight because of Donald Trump's words. That's what he wants you to feel. He wants you to fear. He wants your fear. Don't give it to him.
Oh, but it's working, Larry. because Sonny Hostin of The View is almost crying out of fear.
He is saying things like this: I don't think you're going to have another election if I don't win, or certainly not an election that's meaningful. He's saying the quiet part out loud. If I am not elected, we are going to see January 6th again. And I think we need to be on guard to make sure that we preserve our democracy so that our country looks the way that it should look, like all of us. It's a diverse country. That's what America was built upon. Yes.
I don't know how she got there from Bloodbath, but these people are scaring themselves. Literally scaring his own team. The M5M team will do anything for money. It's so unbelievable because it was so clear. They still were able to take the whole context thing and just say, oh, well, but we know what they're talking about. It's context schmontext. We understand what he's talking about. He's talking about blood, bath, and death and destruction.
Mm-hmm. Shortly after the speech, the Trump campaign tried to clean up those comments, insisting in a statement to NBC News the former president was only talking about a bloodbath for the auto industry and auto workers. And before everyone gets triggered and is shocked, because this is a shock opera that we have to endure, because we're constantly shocked by what he says. But don't let shock... Don't let that trauma let you forget what you're hearing.
That's some NLP right there.
Wow, that's a good one.
Don't let the trauma that you have deep in the recesses of your mind come up front. Don't be afraid of the trauma, the shock opera.
Well, I wrote a Substack on this.
You did. I put it in the show notes even.
And thank you for doing that. And I want to mention something else that we don't have any clips on, but just to mention it.
Dvorak.substack.com.
That even the fact checkers, Snopes being the head of the pack on this one, took the bloodbath comment as true. And they used the rationale that the words, that there will be a bloodbath, just those words alone. He actually said those words. They took it. They didn't have any context aspect to it.
Mm.
They just says, yes, he did say that. So it's true. And then they used an example of people reflecting on this, which was a tweet that somebody posted where the tweet guy in some Occupy Democrats or one of these
tweet
guys
guy.
added the word violent. Yeah. Trump says there'll be a violent bloodbath, and Snopes let that slide. I mean, it's pathetic how everybody works in concert.
But then the point of your article was something else.
Yes, the point of the article, just to summarize, was that Trump brought up a good point about the Chinese building a big factory to do a workaround on anything, because if the Chinese suspect Trump's going to get in office, he's going to put the kibosh on a bunch of things, including maybe at some tariffs, which he did last time. Well, you can't do that if you're coming in from Mexico. And he's made the comment that I'm going to tax them 100%. In the column I mentioned, I don't think he can. The agreement that Trump put together, the Canadian, Mexico, United States trade agreement, won't allow it. He can't do that. If the Chinese are going to build a bunch of cars and bring them in from Mexico, hey, there will be a bloodbath. And nobody's discussing that at all, including Fox.
Well, what kind of high standard do you hold Fox to?
Well, I'm just saying, Fox at least caught on with the phony baloney bloodbath comments, but all they did, if you watch any of their shows, is mock the mainstream. They didn't bring up the point about, you know, is it possible that the Chinese could move stuff in? And I mentioned in the newsletter, another, which I didn't put in the Substack column, is they're already got a mega factory down there building modular homes that they may flood our country with.
Formaldehyde homes.
Maybe.
Really? Because actually, I have to say, I looked at these BYD cars. They look kind of cool if just for in the city.
They've built a million of one of the models already. They build, that's a massive operation.
It's basically a golf cart that costs $7,000 or $8,000.
No, it's
right?
It's more the size of a small Honda.
Right. Yeah. But But you could,
it's not a golf cart.
Someone wrote us from China, probably some CCP agent, and said, these things are actually cool. It's BYD, build your dream, and you can configure the car to say, I want 15 USB ports. I want 10 cup holders. Somehow, I'm not quite sure how it works, but he was saying, oh, you can build it however you want. It's all modular. I'm like, okay. What was that car that was modular that you could determine? I think we had one of those. Not the Kia, but
I don't know.
Some other car.
The point is that this is the real issue here. It's not what Trump said casually.
Right. So they actually have something they could slam him on, and they're overlooking it for the faux cheap fear. Shot. Breaking, bloodbath, breaking.
Cheap shot. They could go after him on this because they could say, well, you're the one that came up with this agreement, this modernized NAFTA, and now the Chinese are going to roll in town and you can't do anything about it. Why don't they talk about that? No. That's not an issue.
It was the Scion.
Even though that is the issue.
The Scion was the car you could configure. The Scion.
Yeah, the Scion. Well, I vaguely remember the Scion.
Yeah. Well, it's cool because we get those. I mean, basically, by the media not bringing the attention to this and by Trump's own trade agreement, they're going to burn down America with these millions of Chinese cars that explode in your garage. So it's a national security issue at this point. You know they're gonna burn.
Not only come in cheap, very good, best price. They come in with best price. Wipe out all of our electric cars, and then they'll blow up all our houses.
Exactly. There's your strategy with your military age men fear. It's the cars. Now, actually, there's a much bigger danger. Much bigger danger. I peel back some layers on Oprah, which, believe me, is a lot of layers. And oh my gee, this issue of the GLP-1 drugs that they, you know, that are just flooding America, and because of our severe sugar addiction, which we have. You know, the world has it, but we're the champions of sugar addiction. The sugar in the processed foods, the processed, you know, the carbs, GMO fruit, fructose, and of course, number one, alcohol, and alcohol, which already has sugar, plus sugar. I mean, how many shows have you seen talking about these sugary alcohol drinks? I mean, especially the morning shows. They're always drinking them. Everywhere. You know, we have this just happened. You remember that Cosmix, the McDonald's, their new concept? This is like a sugar.
What happened to that?
Oh.
Option for breakfast in the morning if you live in North Dallas. McDonald's opening its concept restaurant, Cosmix. It is located on the corner of Campbell and Preston Roads in far North Dallas. There are some food items, but the focus is on drinks and coffee. A lot of coffee, I'm told, and specialty drinks. This is the first location in the state. Yesterday, customers getting an opportunity to try out those new offerings.
We had to get the drinks in the drive-thru and then come inside and get food because you got to try every facet of it. You got to experience every angle. It's so cute.
McDonald's says it plans to open more Cosmix restaurants in the Dallas area within the coming months.
These are obesity fill-up stations.
Especially those fat Texans. You know, Texas got a lot of those big square people. They're huge.
Well, we all know, if you've all seen the meme, America in the 1970s, America in the 2024. I mean, we are fat. We're fat. And it's because...
Have you seen my favorite meme is showing... Says the reason for ocean sea rise, and it shows a 70s shot of a bunch of thin people and then a bunch of fatsoes in the
beach,
water
on the beach. It's funny, but it's really sad because we're not our government, our CDC, Health and Human Services. They're not talking about this. No. Keep eating your sugar. Go just walk around in the airport. People are standing in line. All unhappy looking, waiting for a Cinnabon. Sugar. More sugar. I need sugar. We're addicted. It's this is the, by the way, don't go after the sugar industry. Those guys are more dangerous than the cocaine industry. They'll kill you in a heartbeat if you start talking about it too much. But now we have this fix, which is Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, and Deathbound. So we have all these, you know, these so-called drugs for diabetes. Oh, it's magic. Oh, it's magic. It works so well. You can keep eating all this schlock as much as you want. Load up on sugar. This will take it away. It's just going to take it away. So we know that Oprah gave up her board seat on Weight Watchers, who are now in the game. They purchased a telehealth company, which by itself is an unbelievable development in American healthcare. Any drug you want, you just, you know, I just went on the website, click, 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 answer 5 questions. Yeah, I entered them truthfully. Yeah, sure. And you got your drug. You got your drug. It's no problem. In the mail. It's beautiful. Now from Amazon. Now from, what's his face? Dallas boy. Mavericks boy. Cuban. Mark Cuban.
Oh, Mark Cuban, yeah.
And Oprah also gave up all of her shares. She donated them to the Smithsonian Institute Black Studies Department, for which she can take a fantastic deduction because it's a proper 501c3. And she could always just turn around and buy those back in the open market. It's a public company. It's not like that removes any conflict of interest. So she had the reason why she did that was for this big ABC special. Did you see the special?
I avoided it. I'm sorry. I figured you'd watch it.
Oh, I watched it and I was appalled. I was appalled, blown away. In fact, watching this was almost like being in the future, where I was watching a documentary. You know how these documentaries of the drug companies, now they got everybody hooked on Oxy or on fentanyl, and now you're going back in the documentary and you show that everyone's making money, they're partying, they're doing blow, they got hookers and everything, and they, oh, well, we're killing people, yay, whatever. It felt like I was watching one of those in the future, and we're now seeing how people were tricked into getting into this stuff, and even better, by having the government pay for it. That's what this special was about. And Oprah, yes.
What do you mean the government pay for it? They paid for this special?
No, they're going to pay for this drug. You know that that's what they're lobbying for.
What you mean is the drug. Yes, because Medicare, Medicaid, all of that.
Because
insurance.
It's life-saving. So in this hour-long special on ABC, not for one moment was there a nutritionist, anyone talking about eating healthy foods, staying away. In fact, the word processed food was mentioned once at the very beginning in the setup.
Dr. W. Scott Butch has been studying the disease of obesity.
And please note, throughout this entire special, John, obesity is not because you're addicted to sugar and you're eating this poison. It's a disease. It's a disease.
For nearly 2 decades, for 6 years, he has been the director of obesity medicine in the Bariatric and Metabolic Institute at Cleveland Clinic.
Your weight has been stable. It's come up a little bit here, but I think that's the difficulty. Obesity is a complex disease.
Complex.
There's many inputs from genetics to environments. The food environment's changed. We're not sleeping as much. Our microbiome is changing, maybe due to that changed processed food.
There it is.
What we've learned through science is that the brain controls our body fat and our food intake and our metabolism. So it regulates how much body fat we have in our body and how big those fat cells are. Obesity is a dysfunction of that regulatory system that's supposed to control our body fat in a specific range. So when you lose weight, your body will intentionally slow your metabolism down. It'll intentionally make you more hungry, all in an attempt to get back to where it used to be.
The body is built to maintain our weight, our adipose tissue, our body fat. And some people are more prone to holding on to their fat. They have a higher weight set point. So people who are dieting are basically trying to restrict their caloric intake, because that's what we've been told. Almost trying to hold their breath underwater. And what do we see when that happens? We have to come up for air. Our body is going to make us unable to continue to lose weight, and we will naturally go back to where we previously were.
So here's what they're trying to tell us, that this is a disease and it's in your brain because your brain has a body set point. This is why I'm saying it's like I'm watching a documentary from the future. They're making this stuff up. So your body has a set point and it will make you eat. So you can't help it. It will make you eat. Now, I'm not going to disagree if you compare alcoholism to this as a disease, because yes, it's you are hooked on alcohol. You are, and I think that's generally accepted. Alcoholism is a disease, which also contains a lot of sugar, of course. So this is the point. One point of this special is to hammer into your brain: it's a disease. It's not you. Has nothing to do with you or the pie hole everything goes into. And by the way, people who are have this real issue. But the lying and the uncertainty of the long-term effects of these drugs is not even known, but they are shoving it down your throat with Oprah at the helm. And this is not just a disease, John. It's a complex disease.
Many people have the disease of obesity. Everybody who is overweight does not have the disease of obesity, but if you have the disease of obesity, you're always going to go back to that set point. If you don't have it, then you can diet, lose weight, exercise, all of the things that we've heard over the years. Am I on the right track here?
Absolutely.
Are you all following this? Because if you all are tracking, it means the rest of the world will track.
But there's a spectrum of obesity as well. It's not one disease.
It's a spectrum.
It's many different subtypes of a disease.
So it's complex.
Quite complex.
And that's why it is so wrong to be shaming people, because you don't understand the complexity of each person's situation.
Yeah. And I think as Amy said, this is just a reflection of someone's uneducated belief.
You're uneducated. Shut up. It's a spectrum. Where else have we heard this? Oh, autism. It's a spectrum whereby everybody can be on the spectrum. These are the tricks they employ. Now, this category of drug has been around for minimum 18 years, but they've never really been able to sell it the way that they're selling it now. Part of that is certainly since the lockdown, we have just ballooned, certainly as a nation, because everything contains sugar. Everything is GMO'd. All the foods we are eating are unhealthy. But there's one extra thing we didn't have. That was a magic marketing machine.
Dr. Velasquez is here. Were you all surprised in your practices when people started losing weight?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've already been using other medications for the last 10, 20 years, but these were just a little bit more effective. I mean, we hadn't seen a
10, 20 years for diabetes.
For obesity.
Where was the announcement?
I think
I go to the Cleveland Clinic. Nobody told me. Oh, so you've been doing this for 20 years?
18 or so.
Yeah, wasn't mainstream then. We didn't have TikTok. That was our problem.
Okay.
There's the first clue. We didn't have TikTok. That was our main problem. I'm going to circle back to that.
Interesting the way they said problem.
Oh, well, of course, because it was a marketing problem. 100%. I'm going to get back to that in a moment, the marketing problem. So these are, by the way, that's a doctor. So there's two doctors she has on the show, and they're very, very knowledgeable. They know everything about this because they've been doing this for a long time. And by the way, you're going to be on it for life.
And do you have to be on it for the rest of your life?
Yeah, the data would support that. I mean, we have good trials showing that when these patients stop the medication, the disease comes back.
Both of you are consultants.
Can you stop it for a second?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to complain about the change in language world.
Oh, yeah.
The use of the word disease, which always implied to me something that was contagious, it had a vector, it had a bacteria, or some sort of a foundational reason for existing. Now it's everything. Gambling. Gambling's a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking's a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Being fat is a disease. None of these things have got anything to do with with vectors at all.
It's a
but
spectrum.
They use the term. This is like the redefinition of vaccine.
That's right.
Where they give you a genetic shot of some sort, and that's somehow a vaccine because they've redefined it. This redefinition, which I have a couple of clips of about something else later in the show, is just getting on my nerves.
It's only going to get worse. And this what these people are doing here is more dangerous than COVID and the COVID vax. You know, I think so. I don't know if I have this on the clip, but somewhere Oprah talks about there's 2 billion obese people in the world. So a disease has 2 billion people? Huh? No, because it's a lie. All this is a lie. It's what you're putting in your mouth. This is when people go on the carnivore diet. They're like, oh, yeah, I went all beef and look at me. I'm great. That's not because of the beef. Well, it doesn't hurt. But you stop eating all the other crap. That's the magic bullet right there. But let's go back and listen to these doctors. She has a very interesting question.
And do you have to be on it for the rest of your life?
Yeah, the data would support that. I mean, we have good trials showing that when these patients stop the medication.
Hold on, stop again. The tone of the answer is as if it's a positive thing.
That's right.
And it's really frightening to listen to this. You can back it up and start it over. But the tone of the, do you have to be on this for the rest of your life? Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah, that's, yes, you do. And that's a good thing. How is that a good thing?
Oh, man, I can't wait until we get through this whole, it's only 37 seconds, but when we get through it, you're going to love it even more.
And do you have to be on it for the rest of your life?
Yeah, the data would support that. I mean, we have good trials showing that when these patients stop the medication, the disease comes back.
Both of you are consultants.
Hold on, stop again.
I'm not going to rewind it all the way. Okay, yes.
Use of the word good
in
her explanation, we have good trials, is another positive reinforcement term to make it sound like, oh, yeah, you have to be on the rest of your life. It's good. The associative wording is just unbelievable. This is really a fascinating piece of propaganda.
It gets better.
These patients stop the medication, the disease comes back.
Both of you are consultants to the drug companies. What does that mean?
What that means is that they're looking for our expert opinion to be able to deliver high quality care to patients.
You know, I've been involved with some of these companies in developing educational programs and modules for medical students and medical trainees to learn more about the disease of obesity. I'm also running clinical trials with future medications.
Okay, so the obesity epidemic among children.
They are paid consultants for the pharmaceutical companies that they're talking about. And Oprah just says, what's that about? Oh, yeah. Well, they could pay me for my expertise. And the other guy's like, oh, yeah, I do educational programs. It's called marketing. These are marketing shills. Paid doctors. This is what got everyone in trouble with Oxy. Because the doctors are bought and paid for. They're sitting right there with Oprah on ABC primetime saying, oh, yeah, no, I'm a consultant. Yeah, I get paid by these companies. It's great. it's mind-boggling. Oh, but wait, there's more. After, I'm just going to presume Oprah gave all her shares up, took the tax benefit, and could have easily repurchased the shares in the public market. Let's bring on the lady from Weight Watchers.
Okay, so I recently made the decision to not continue serving on the board of Weight Watchers. And I made that decision because I wanted no perceived conflict of interest for this special.
Oh, there's none here, Oprah.
So that I could have a conversation with you.
For some marketing.
Seema Sistani, the CEO of Weight Watchers. And now Weight Watchers has changed its philosophy and has purchased a company that is in the weight loss medications. Can you tell us why that philosophy changed?
The philosophy has changed because it's a disease, Oprah.
We are the most clinically tested, evidence-based, science-backed behavior change program.
Okay, roll the prompter.
But we were missing the third prong, which was biology. There could be somebody who needs medications because they have that biological underpinning. And therefore, what is so important is for us to provide that care and also to help people release the shame. For all those people who came side by side and took on the behavior change, some of them walked away without the success.
Mm-hmm.
And to those people, I want to say, It's not your fault.
Not your fault.
Why do we need Weight Watchers if we've got Zepbound and Wegovy?
Weight Watchers is not just about weight loss. It's about community, it's about education, and it is about care. That's our new philosophy, is to help people live longer, happier lives with weight health care.
No, you're now a drug pusher. You bought a company that does telehealth, and Oprah just put you on television to make sure everybody can go to the well-known Weight Watchers brand and buy Ozempic and Wegovy from you. Well done, Oprah. Now, let's talk about the risks. This is my favorite because we bring in America's favorite doctor, Dr. Jen from ABC. Listen to this.
People often don't realize that these were first FDA approved in the United States for help in managing type 2 diabetes almost 20 years ago. So we have extensive safety and efficacy data. They have a good track record. However, when you talk about risks, I think you need to ask four questions. What are the risks of taking these drugs versus what are the risks of not taking these drugs?
This is so good. So if you don't take these drugs, which obviously have some risk, you could die of a heart attack. You can die of all kinds of things that come with obesity. So she's going to say that the risk is lower taking the drugs than not taking the drug. Oh, you don't want to raise your risk by not taking the drugs.
This is what are the risks of not taking these drugs? What are the benefits of taking these drugs? And what are the benefits of not taking these drugs? We know conclusively that if you do not treat or manage the conditions of overweight or obesity, the risks are significant. Increased risks of heart attack, stroke, various types of cancer. That has to be part of this decision-making analysis. So take a very rare potential risk or side effect of this class of medication. But if a risk is noted to occur one out of every 100,000 times, that's rare, that's one case. But if all of a sudden a million people are on that drug, you're going to see that rare risk or side effect 10 times.
Oh my, Dr. Jen, hang your head in shame. So yeah, there's a rare side effect. So, you'll see a couple people in 100,000, but if everyone's on it, it's going to seem like a lot of people have side effects. So keep that in mind. I'm Dr. Jen, America's favorite doctor. Dr. Death is what I call her. So let's bring back the doctors. Let's talk about these side effects, which as far as I know, there is an increased risk of suicidal tendencies. There have been people who have brought suicide to completion. That is I have it in the show notes. That is how some of the studies call it. They've brought suicide to full completion. There's also all kinds of things for people with thyroid. We've tried it on mice. So what are you worrying about?
But they do have side effects.
I think that they've gotten overhyped. Medicines have side effects, but the important part is that they're mild to
it's overhyped.
Moderate in the research studies.
Yeah, I want to talk to have you answer this question about serious health effects down the road.
Yeah, we can speak to that. So there's been a lot of hype around pancreatitis, gallbladder complications, concerns for thyroid cancer. So this has really not been shown in human studies that this is.
Because you don't have human studies on it. You've done it. This is showing up in mice. Oh, and we don't want to test that on humans. The mice, they died, but it's just mice.
Concerns for thyroid cancer. So this has really not been shown in human studies that this is a downstream complication and that really that the risk is less than 1%. And so when we're talking about any medication.
But people who have it, it is an issue for them.
So if anybody has a history.
Mm-hmm. One more thing.
Yeah, sure.
1% is 1 out of 100, not 1 out of 100,000. They've pushed in your brain.
Yep.
The idea of 1 in 100,000. Well, 1 in 100,000. That's not that much. But when you say 1%,
yes,
you might as well say 1 in 100, which is a little different.
Yeah.
That's like a magnitude. It's 1,000 times more.
This is a sales job, and it's disgusting.
And so when we're talking about any medication.
But people who have it, it is an issue for them.
So if anybody has a history specifically of medullary thyroid cancer, medullary thyroid cancer is very, very rare. So if they do have that, we are not prescribing that medication. So we have to be able to keep up with knowing the data and recognizing that it's rare, but it's there, and we have to always screen.
Rare, but there.
It's rare, but there. And we all have to screen. Well, Okay. Final clip from this special. Now, this is what just, my mouth hung open. They brought in two reps from the actual pharma companies, from Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, sat them together. Arch rivals sat them together, which Oprah kept making a big deal about. This is so awesome. I mean, they are so serious about this disease and the spectrum of disease that they just want to help you. That's why they're sitting side by side. And they looked and sounded like marketing ladies to me. But they are there to pitch the most important part. And this will be used over and over again in the halls of Congress.
Miguel Morris is a senior vice president for Novo Nordisk, the Danish company behind Ozempic and Wegovy. And Rhonda Pacheco is the group vice president for Eli Lilly, the American pharma company that manufactures and sells Mounjaro and Zepbound. And they've been sitting together this entire hour. I wanted to ask you, in the Novo Nordisk offices, when this hit TikTok and became like a sensation, what was going on back there?
It was actually over 2 decades ago that Novo Nordisk made a stand that obesity is a disease and that the shame that society heaps on people who are dealing with excess weight and obesity needs to stop.
And so can you both talk about access? First of all, running out of the drugs, I guess that's because the demand was so high, correct?
Unprecedented demand. I think people are getting the memo like you're talking about, and people are really understanding that this is a disease, and they're seeing treatments that are showing this efficacy. And so they're going out and they're speaking to their physicians. And so it is unprecedented. It's also
very... And there are a lot of physicians who are not informed about it.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. So the job's not done.
So access is complex, just like the disease itself is complex. Obesity medications are not covered to the same extent, and that's why that out-of-pocket cost is what it is.
When you look at obesity, that it's nowhere near the coverage that we need.
Well, I thank you both for being here the first time in 100 years. This has happened.
Okay, Oprah, well done. So as I start to dive into this, all of a sudden, I start to figure it out. This is also the TikTok problem in general. TikTok has figured out, they have entire hashtag pages that they maintain for obesity, and all the influencers are tagged by this. TikTok is not they're not putting the influencers in there. The influencers are paid by the drug companies. They're paid to do their thing, and I think it's hundreds of thousands of them. TikTok is responsible for the algo and for the hashtag and for making sure that it gets pushed into everybody's face. And this is why Google in particular and Meta, of course, they are so pissed off, because these guys have basically figured out the remote control. When in the 80s, what was the big thing that got us all hooked on television? It wasn't television per se. It was the clicker. Click, 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 just click, 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 click. And that's what TikTok is. Swipe up, click, 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 click. It's the same mechanism on, hyperized. So now they've got all these different things that these drugs are going to cure: dementia, inflammation, heart issues, depression, addiction to anything, lower risk of alcohol abuse disorder. This is going to be it. And it's going to fix everything, even though we don't really have the trials and there's 1% and probably, this good stuff. And you could probably fix a lot of this by eating different things. No one talked about it, by lowering your intake of sugar. And I have to say, if you look at all the television shows, particularly the morning shows that are rampant on cable and on local television, all the ladies are sitting there drinking their sugary alcohol drinks. Everybody's talking about cocktails. So we're just taking in more and more sugar. And then I came across this and it all came home. The stigma of obesity is the next frontier. The stigma of depression is already all over TikTok. And I think TikTok is cleaning up. I think they're making so much money by manipulating their algos to put these influencers in front of mainly teenage girls, because they are now, they've gone all out on the marketing of depression. And if you look at the drugs that the children are on, from Prozac to Lexapro, I mean, I can't even tell you all the different brand names that they have. Here's an interview with one of those influencers who talks about how this works.
What are hot girl pills?
Hot girl pills are SSRIs or antidepressants. It's a way that Gen Z girls seem to describe their antidepressants on TikTok. There's also silly girl pills. There's also all kinds of mental health merchandise with pills on them. There's Prozac pillows. There's antidepressant phone cases. There's a common phrase now, like hot girls take Lexapro. Girls take sertraline, all kinds of stuff like that. Not only is there the normalization of these mental health diagnoses, but the absolute glamorization of them now. And you've got like kids putting their mental health medication and diagnosis in their Twitter bios, young people putting them on their Tinder profiles. Like, you can't say it's stigma anymore. That's the wrong context, especially for things like anxiety and depression, autism, ADHD. I'm sure there's areas of it that are stigmatized, but the way these campaigns talk about it, it's as if it's 10 years ago.
This is what they're doing. These pharma rats have captured our children, particularly girls. They're glamorizing their antidepressive meds. Hot girls, there's t-shirts, hot girls take Lexapro. You can buy it right there from the influencers. Oh, look up, go to my Etsy store. Oh, I've got my Prozac pillow. I'll put it in, oh yes. Kids at school. Oh, yeah. You laugh, but they... The demon has a hold of our children. Is it social media? Yeah, there's all kinds of issue. The real problem is Big Pharma has our children. They have them by the balls, because all of them have balls now. They have them by the balls, and they're controlling them, and they're glamorizing these drugs. Get your kids off of this stuff. This is unbelievable, and it just makes so much sense. Now I know why Google is so mad about TikTok. They're getting all the pharma money, all of it, because they figured out the magical formula. Well, this was around for 18 years. It never worked before. What happened? TikTok.
That's actually TikTok. Kind of the real thematic that's aspect of this, which
exactly
is
exactly it.
Wait, even Oprah was, you know, made fun of the fact that it's been around forever. So it's been around for 18 years. And only now they're making hay. And what's the coincidence TikTok would be it?
What do you mean the coincidence?
The coincidence of how do you start marketing? What mechanism allowed this thing to now become popular and marketed properly? It wasn't possible before, obviously, because it's been around for 18 years. So what's the coincidence?
Yeah, they have
TikTok
influencers, and TikTok will sell you the algorithm promotion heating.
They probably sell
it.
You a package.
Oh yeah, wait, that's what I'm saying. There's the I think I have it here.
Here's what we're gonna do for you. You sit in front of one of the guys, the buyer, and you say, "Here's what we've got. Nobody else has this." And then they outline it. You know, I've seen these guys send their sales pitch. Mm-hmm. They write it all out and have a whiteboard maybe, and they'll show them exactly how it's gonna work and what it's gonna cost and how long it's gonna take. And again, and nobody else can do it.
I'm reading from their own page on TikTok. At TikTok, we're proud to be a platform that offers a safe place where people feel comfortable sharing their personal stories and openly discussing well-being. And we're constantly inspired by our community support for one another. This hashtag Mental Health Awareness Month, we're announcing the launch of new initiatives aimed at promoting positive mental well-being, combating stigma, and providing support to our community. Dude, they're not even bashful about it. You can buy the hashtag. Well, yeah, but because they're killing.
Why?
Because they're killing children. They know it. This is why it feels in the future. We may not be doing this show, but in the future, there's going to be a documentary. They may even put this audio in it. Where these podcasters figured it out, but they were just podcasters.
Well, that I doubt.
No one listened to them. and even Oprah was in on it. It's sad. And these meds, they lock the demons inside of you. These aren't helping you. These aren't, no way. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, now that Finland has doubled their intake of SSRIs, they're now the happiest country in the world.
I have that clip.
Oh, you do?
But before that, I want to play the ADHD clip, which is showing that GMA3, Good Morning America 3, is on board. They're yucking it up the whole time. Here we go.
Okay. Let's look at these rising rates of ADHD that are across the country. What are we learning about this?
So these are new numbers from the CDC, and I just want to show you some of these numbers because they are concerning. So if you look at the years from 2020 to 2022, the rates of ADHD diagnosis in children from 5 to 17 have increased by 2.5% since 2019, and the rate is higher among adolescents, those aged 12 to 17. And boys are twice as likely to be diagnosed than girls, and this accounts to almost 6 million children aged 3 to 17 so far have been diagnosed within the United States. It's concerning. It's something that we need to pay attention to because it not only affects, obviously, their social interactions, but just their development, learning, education.
So why boys more than girls?
That's a great question. I think that there's a lot of structural, societal questions that we have. It's probably nuanced and complicated, to be honest, DeMarco, that we won't be able to find a specific answer. I think one of the reasons why we're seeing these rising rates are a couple of factors. Number one, a decrease in stigma around the diagnosis. Many people are talking about it, so people feel more comfortable. There's more awareness about the symptoms, so parents know when to bring this up with their physicians and their child's doctor. And then also just in terms of access, there's more access for those who are seeking out help because they're just... more people know about it. And so hopefully this leads to more people getting that diagnosis. Maybe it's not necessarily more people are getting ADHD. We're just being able to find it better,
which is also good.
Did he mention what drugs you can get if you have the diagnosis? And are you not afraid of the stigma? You're not afraid of the stigma? Where's our Federal Trade Commission? We need all kinds of... come on, let's at least pretend. We need all kinds of government organizations to come in and stop this. They're marketing death to our children. They don't even know...
Drug companies own the media. The media tells the government what to do.
They don't even know how SSRIs work.
No, that's the funny part.
Yeah, they just kind of work. Yeah, they just work.
In the same GMA3, might as well play the happiness report so we can at least get that out of the way.
There's new info in the happiness report. America is less happy.
First time, surprisingly, I guess it's not a surprise to too many people, but America has fallen out of the top 20. So this is a new Gallup poll where they basically analyze citizens of around 140 nations, and they rank the world's happiest countries. And America has normally sat in the top 20, but for the first time, it's fallen out of that. It's fallen to number 23. But I think as we were talking during the break, the most interesting thing about this is that millennials seem to be the unhappiest compared to those who are in the boomer category. And there are a lot of reasons why I can suspect that might be.
I was actually saying it could be the pressure from IG and Facebook and all of the social media attention there. But how can we change that, get those numbers up?
You know, there are, I think, number one, to your point, I think that there is something to be said about social media. They always say comparison is the thief of joy. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an aspect of that. But there have been proven scientific studies in terms of what benefits us the most to get our happiness up. Number one, physical activity, obviously, improving those endorphins. Sleep, you want to make sure that you have a routine. And then avoiding certain food groups. During wintertime, especially, when we feel down, we reach for those carbs. I know I reach for French fries because that causes that surge in sugar and sometimes even endorphins and dopamine because you're just so excited to have it. But avoiding that and switching to lean meats can help you stabilize your emotions and be better throughout the day. Also practicing gratitude, keeping a journal. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, and most importantly, again, avoiding comparison. I think that that's one of the most important factors here.
Oh, man. He says it right there. Oh, I need some sugar. I'm not happy. I need some sugar. Give me some sugar.
Yeah, he does. But the thing that always crops up in these, there's a couple of weird things that crop up. Keeping a journal.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
But I've noticed it before, keeping a journal. Hmm. And by the way, I recommend keeping a journal to writers. Anyone who thinks they're going to be a writer someday.
Well, you know, so not only the kids, but the teachers are now on the so-called anti-sad pills. We had the clip on the last show, but the teacher's saying, I'm taking anti-sad pills. And I got a note from Sir Kyle the Fearless, Jedi Knight of the Orange Fleet. And he says the teachers on drugs is a result of the terrible shape of our schools, as well as the wide availability and pushing of anti-SAD pills. While the lady on the TikTok is weak for needing pills right after student teaching, my wife is a 13th year middle school teacher a couple of years ago, considered taking anti-SAD pills. And this was with a firm sustain for, this was a firm sustain for them. Not quite sure what that means. Disdain probably. Luckily I convinced her otherwise and found natural methods to fix the issue. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of teachers are users. The school system is so bad. The teachers stay because they are either passionate or out of guilt, or they want to get that pension. They think they don't have any better options. Kids are allowed to do whatever they want. Teachers don't have the power because they would, you know, you'll be called racist. Even at a Christian school my wife recently escaped to, same issues to a lesser extent. Certain minority students and their parents feel entitled to lecture parents. My wife is incentivized to not punish certain minority students because then she'd have to deal with those parents and have to over-explain her actions. The administration won't stand up to these parents. This is a drain. We're circling it. Going down, going down, sucking us down. Now, There are some obvious issues with social media. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there with books, and, you know, Abigail Schreier is back out on the promotion path with her book, talking about how, you know, we're putting these children in too much therapy and always asking, how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? Are you feeling happy? Which, of course, makes the kid, you know, say, well, am I happy? No, I'm probably not happy. Boom, entered the anti-SAD pill. Jonathan Haidt is back out. He did the original Coddling of the American Mind, and now he's out with, rewiring our kids' brains. And his solution in this book is, we need age verification on social media. It's all about social media now, and completely skips over the drugs. 1 in 8 kids is on drugs in America. 1 in 8 people in America are on these drugs. You and I are sheltered when it comes to that. This is normal. This is just the most normal thing. And if we don't speak up about it, it's just going to keep going on and on and on. So, I see you have a TikTok clip. Is that appropriate for right here?
No, actually, this TikTok clip is talking about the momentum toward getting legislation against TikTok.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
You want to play it?
Yeah, I want to play this.
The Senate today receiving a briefing on TikTok from U.S. intelligence agencies. This comes just days after the House passed a bill aimed at addressing the app's affiliation with communist China. The legislation requires TikTok to divest from the Chinese parent company ByteDance, or else face a ban from U.S. app stores. Despite overwhelming support for the bill in the House, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has not yet indicated how the Senate plans to proceed. If the bill gets through the upper chamber, President Biden has said he's willing to sign it.
Well, I mean, it's so clear now. This is why Mnuchin wants to buy it. He's like, bros, we need this thing. If we can get this thing, we're going to get all that pharma money. He's not stupid. He knows exactly what's going on. Then I know how to fix this, but we can't do that without talking about the Missouri v. Biden case, which, as our constitutional lawyer Rob predicted, has now come to the forefront. Now the media can't stop talking about it. This is the basic complaint is, during the pandemic, the Biden administration, I believe also the Trump administration, or during the Trump administration, but certainly the White House, would call the social media companies and say, hey, take that post down. That's disinformation. And they threatened by saying, well, you know, we got Section 230. You might want to do what we say. So we have audio from the Supreme Court. This was quite interesting, and a lot of different, well, not a lot, several news outlets paid attention to it. We'll start with the PBS NewsHour.
The first one was about social media companies and whether the Biden administration
violated the First Amendment when they flagged COVID misinformation to tech giants like Facebook and X, formerly Twitter. Where were the justices on this case in particular?
Well, the crux of the case, and the second case as well, is really how do you tell when the government has crossed the line between what's permissible persuasion and unconstitutional coercion? In fact, just the Chief Justice framed that as the question, how do we measure this? Significant persuasion enough? What else? In fact, the lawyers for the states that brought this lawsuit said, you don't even need coercion. You just need inducement and encouragement, which Justice Kagan said was, wow, that's so broad. That's so expansive. So they're really trying to find out, you know, where is the line here? And did the Biden administration cross it? And the justices didn't seem entirely sympathetic to the challengers here, the states of Missouri, Louisiana, and five individuals who brought the lawsuit. Because they saw a couple problems with the case. First, did these individuals in the states even have the right, the legal right to sue here? The justices couldn't see a clear line between standing. The claims that the individual said their posts had been taken down because of government action. In fact, Justice Kagan said at one point there was such a time gap between the communication by the government and what happened to their posts on Facebook. Was it government action or was it the platform's own action? My sense of the argument afterwards was that they're leaning towards, a majority is definitely leaning in favor of the Biden administration here.
That's the general consensus. Politico saying that, everyone say, oh no, it looks like Biden administration is going to be good on this. Of course, really the problem is, and just to reiterate, the First Amendment states that the government cannot censor speech. That's the whole idea. It's not saying what the government can do. It's saying the government cannot do that. But of course, back when the framers put this together, there was no internet.
Should the U.S. government be allowed to tell social media companies that people's posts are false or harmful? And if it does, is that the same as pressuring the outlets to remove them? Complaints came from the Republican-led states of Louisiana and Alabama, and five users who say their posts opposing COVID vaccines during the pandemic were targeted. Justice Department lawyer Brian Fletcher told Supreme Court justices the government wasn't curtailing citizens' free speech, but exercising its own.
I think that the government is entitled to speak for itself. It's a feature of our constitutional democracy.
Two lower courts disagreed, deciding that federal agencies were coercing social media outlets, blocking rights guaranteed in the First Amendment. At the same point, Louisiana's Solicitor General Benjamin Aguinaga argued here.
If the government says our view of that is that it's false, they can absolutely say that. But if they do more and they say you need to take this down,
that's a problem.
First Amendment issue.
But the court seems reluctant to restrict the federal government, especially on health and safety issues. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country.
John Watson, a journalism law professor at the American University in Washington.
To a large extent, the First Amendment is dysfunctional.
But he says the Constitution never envisioned the internet, a platform for billions to say whatever they want, true or not.
So I have to play a longer clip of the freshman justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the woman who could not define what a woman is during her Senate hearing. This woman is disqualified from sitting on the Supreme Court.
I want to do a mea culpa here because I thought she would be okay. But the more that I see of her in these various cases, she's dumb. And I mean, she has good ways of putting things, but she is not a good justice. She doesn't have any, her logic is skewed. So it's like she doesn't even understand how the system works.
Oh,
she's a terrible Supreme Court justice.
She's got her ideas about it.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging. Or even pressuring. Platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that. Because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
I just got to stop it here for a second. During World War II, there was a large campaign because the government could not tell people to shut up, and they had a campaign. It was loose lips sink ships, but they could not block people from reporting on what was happening. But now Ketanji Brown Jackson is like, well, if kids are jumping out of windows, the government has to step in. No. No justice.
And Your Honor, I understand that instinct. And I guess what I tell you is our position is not that the government can't interact with the platforms there. They can and they should in certain circumstances like that that present such dangerous issues for society and especially young people. But the way they do that has to be in compliance with the First Amendment. And I think that means they can give them all the true information that the platform needs and ask to amplify that.
Would you like to hear a second clip from Ketanji Brown Jackson?
I can't get enough of this.
Right, you're just saying that. I guess I thought when you say the way they do that is consistent with the First Amendment is that they have to show that they have a compelling interest to do what they're doing. In other words, you want us to take the line.
Wait a minute. The government can stifle your speech as long as they can show a real interest that it's really, really important. Has this woman read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights?
She's like a classic federal government should be running everything. States' rights shouldn't even be considered. They should just trample us. This is exactly the wrong kind of person that should be on the Supreme Court.
The First Amendment is that they have to show that they have a compelling interest to do what they're doing. In other words, you want us to take the line to be between compulsion and encouragement. And what we're looking at is the government can't compel, maybe they can encourage. I'm wondering whether that's not really the line. The line is, does the government, pursuant to the First Amendment, have a compelling interest in doing things that result in restricting the speech in this way? That test, I think, takes into account all of these different circumstances.
Oh, man. Get her out of there. Impeach!
That we don't really care as much about how much the government is compelling, or maybe we do, but in the context of tailoring and not as sort of a freestanding inquiry that's overlaid on all of this. Does that make sense?
It does, Your Honor, and I apologize for missing your guidance earlier. So the way I think about that is I've been discussing the standard, and I thought we've all been discussing. No,
that's the lawyer. Now, here's Gorsuch. He had something to say. He brought in Section 230.
Mr. Fletcher, on that point, you mentioned coercion repeatedly in terms of threat. Can there also be coercion, in your view, in terms of inducements?
We think there can. I think often a threat or an inducement is sort of the flip side, one or the other. I think in the next case, you could construe it either way, threat of prosecution, offer of leniency. So we acknowledge that it can be both, but it has to be a threat or an inducement of some concrete government action, not just a more government speech.
And hypothetically, and I'm not saying this happened here, but would a threat or an inducement with respect to any trust actions qualify as coercion?
Sure.
and a threat or an inducement with respect to Section 230 qualify?
So I think that one's harder for two reasons. One is that these are executive branch officials who don't have the ability to unilaterally enact 230 reform. I think the question
is... But they have a power to influence that.
Influence that, but the question is...
Would that be enough to say we're going to, if you don't do X, we are going to change our position on Section 230?
So potentially yes as to legislation. 230, if I could just get this out, though, I think is different because 230 is about content moderation. It's about this very issue. And I think a government official has to be able to say, I support Section 230 reform because I'm concerned about these things. And also, in the meantime, I think platforms should be doing better.
I understand that. But in terms of advocating for change of Section 230, that could be coercion in your view.
If it were framed as a threat, our position wasn't done here.
And how about saying you're killing people? Could that be coercion in some circumstances? That if you don't change your moderation policies, you're responsible for killing people.
So I think that one is much harder. That's a statement that President Biden made off the cuff.
I'm not talking about the context specific issues, and I understand you have arguments there. But could that, in some circumstances, an accusation by a government official that unless you change your policies, you're responsible for killing people, could that be coercion?
So I find it hard to imagine a situation where that sort of public statement could be. I'll acknowledge, as you say, context matters a ton, and so I don't want to say it's impossible. All I'm saying is it didn't happen here.
So what they're all talking about the wrong thing. I'm not a lawyer, but I can read, and Section 230 is not that complicated. It's not about the blocking and deplatforming and algoizing. All of that is permitted as per Section 230. The main point is Section 2, under the Good Samaritan section, civil liability. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of or be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider, i.e., if you post something libelous or something dangerous and something that makes someone kill themselves or sparks an insurrection or whatever it is, the platform, the interactive computer service, as they call it, cannot be held liable for that. If that provision was changed, everything would change overnight.
Shut down everything.
Yes. And so I am proposing, and we're going to, I want an amicus brief to the court. I am proposing that we simply, by one simple change to Section 230, no provider or user of a paid interactive computer service. We all agree that if you are not paying for the service you're using, you are the product. Everyone agrees with this. Yeah, I know I'm the product. They're marketing to me. They're marketing pills. They're marketing diet stuff to me. They're doing all kinds of stuff. Hey, if you're paying for that service, even if it's $1 a month, which I doubt most people would pay, then you should have no liability because an interactive computer service can also be a web hosting service. It could be WordPress.com. So, you know, obviously, if you're providing a service and someone's paying you for it, you know, there's a difference. So you shouldn't be held liable. But if you're getting it for free because you, the interactive computer service, you are using those people as your product, you absolutely should be held liable.
That's never going to happen. This is the
amicus brief.
The thesis where you could, I'm not signing it. The thesis is that these systems are like community bulletin boards. It's like a bulletin board that used to be, the grocery stores used to have them as you checked out.
Yes.
And you could post anything you want up there. And if somebody goes up there and sees it, they can tear it down if they want.
I can't tear down your post.
You can report me.
I can't tear down. It's not, that's apples to oranges. The community board is not making money off of your post in the supermarket. There's a big difference. These are not information content providers. These are marketing companies.
Safeway store is making the money, and that is one of the little add-on benefits.
You are pro-death. I'm just saying, there's a very simple solution, and Yeah, I know it's a heavy lift because everyone's in the pocket of Silicon Valley, the drug companies. There's absolutely no incentive to do it other than the people that maybe want to protect their children.
I don't understand why, if you want to pay for the service, it should be more wide open than if it was free. Why is there a financial difference in the way you see things?
Oh, because I think that then you are, there's a contract, because you have a payment, you have a contract, which is not the same as a EULA, and you're agreeing to certain things, and no one will do it. It'll shut it down.
It is the same as a EULA, and it will be a EULA.
But then you're, okay, I'm telling you that this is the way to go because it will shut these companies down. You want to live dangerously? Pay the entrance fee. You're good to go. That's the way I see it. I agree. It's not necessarily something that would ever happen in our lifetime, but we're not going in a good direction. The pharma companies have everyone by the BALLS, and they're just going to kill us all. They're going to kill us. Because eventually, I was like, "Oh, yeah, this is great."
No, I'm not gonna. That I'm not arguing against. Okay. That thesis, I'm all in.
Yeah.
They own the mainstream media because of their ads. I was watching. What was I watching the other day? Oh no, I was like some of the clips I got today. I got from ABC News, and ABC News is all pharma ads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I'm skipping through these ads one after another, stuff I never heard of, and it's just one thing after another, and it's horrible. So they own the mainstream media. The mainstream media makes policies based on what they tell them to do.
That's right.
It's so obvious it's corrupt. Right.
Meanwhile, the other biggie,
Every time you clear your throat, I'm waiting for bullshit.
No, that's
the exact same throat.
I know. It's exactly the same. Let me play it.
Bullshit.
There it is. The other
Stop doing it.
The other Goliath in the room is the military-industrial complex. Now, this is so brazen. We know, and by the way, I think the EU should be slapped for this. They are putting the SWIFT system in even more peril than it already is.
That's
our American.
I know where you're going. I don't think I have a clip on it.
I have the clip. So the SWIFT system is, in essence, a bunch of banks. Everybody has an account with the bank. And when you send money from one bank to the other bank or through your bank, it's not like the money transfers over the wire. No, it's just a messaging system, the SWIFT system. And they say, hey, take $5 from that account, put it into that account. And of course, all the central banks have big accounts, including Russia, and they have about $300 billion sitting around in the SWIFT system, of which over $200 billion is at Euroclear. They're the clearinghouse. You might have heard of Automatic Clearinghouse, ACH. They are the clearinghouse in the EU. And so they're sitting on over 200 billion euros worth of Russian money, and they want it. They want it so bad. They want to take that money. Everybody wants that money because stupid America, stupid Republican, stupid Trump won't send weapons to Ukraine. Oh, wait a minute. We're not actually sending weapons to Ukraine. The military-industrial base. The military-industrial base needs that money. We need that money. We need that money to build stuff, to buy stuff, to pay our people, to keep the GDP up. We need that money, money, money. Well, we'll take the interest of the money. Yeah, yeah, there you go. We'll take the interest. We'll call it a windfall profit. But let's make sure that 90% of it still goes to us, to the military industrial base.
Now, the European Union appears set to use frozen Russian assets to fund the purchase of arms for Ukraine. The EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says he will present the plan to the bloc's leaders this week.
The draft plan would see 90% of the revenues from seized Russian assets being funneled towards an EU-run weapons fund for Ukraine. Nearly 300 million euros worth of foreign currency, gold and bonds belonging to the Russian Central Bank were frozen by the West following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. 70% of that is held by the Belgium-based institution Euroclear. Over the next 4 years, the profit generated by frozen Russian state assets is expected to be worth up to 27 billion euros. So far, the EU member states have mostly agreed to spend this money on Ukraine, but whether the funds should be used for humanitarian, infrastructure, or military purposes is as yet undecided.
Send it to us.
EU's foreign policy chief Josep Borrell sees potential for weapons purchases.
So after the discussion today, I've seen that there is a strong support. There are some member states that want to have more details, but there is, I think, a strong support to take the revenues, the windfall profits, and to use it to support Ukraine. How? Military, to increment the resources of the European Peace Facility, and also to support the development of the Ukrainian defense industry.
But it's not Borrell or the Commission who will decide. That will depend on the Council of Member States meeting this Thursday and Friday.
If they do this, the European Union, who would ever use the SWIFT system again? Well, those a-holes. If they can block your money and they'll take all your interest and your profit. Why would anyone use that? And that is the backbone of the U.S. dollar and the euro dollar. And that we're allowing this, which we clearly are.
Where's the bankers out there noticing that this is an issue? They're the ones that are going to end up screwed in the end.
Well, I'm sure
this is not a good idea.
It's a horrible idea. And then notice how, well, they're fighting over the money now. Hey, get that money. It's worth up to 29 billion euros. Yeah, but you have to send it to us. Send it to us, the war machine. And it's not weapons for Ukraine. No, it's going to Raytheon and Boeing. But yeah, okay. Go for it, boys.
By the way, I have a... friend of a friend kind of came up in the conversation.
One of those.
Worked at one of the subcontractors for Boeing. And his claim is that the problem at Boeing is corporate culture. It's when the company moved to South Carolina for most of its manufacturing.
Thanks to Nikki Haley.
They lost the extreme safety, quality control, corporate culture of the Seattle area, and replace it with whatever the hell's going on in South Carolina. Not that they can't do the job.
Nikki Haley and Lindsey Graham. Do we need to say more? That's the culture there.
You end up with a culture that doesn't give a shit, basically, and that's Boeing's problem.
I have an update on the whistleblower because the retaliation complaint has been revealed.
In this 32-page complaint, Barnett's lawyers lay out the crux of a federal labor lawsuit against Boeing. His lawyer tells me Barnett did not want to destroy the company. He wanted to save the company. John Barnett was at Boeing for 32 years, a quality manager for more than half of those years. He spent his final 7 years at Boeing in South Carolina on the production line for the highly touted 787 Dreamliner. In this whistleblower retaliation lawsuit, Barnett says he and other quality managers were pressured by Boeing upper management to violate FAA standards as well as Boeing's own policies. Barnett stated he was worried about a catastrophic event. The issues he cited included documenting inspections never performed, incorrect serial number data not being fixed, defective parts that were not fully documented and may have been put back on airplanes, titanium slivers being left on E-nuts and not cleaned. The concern there is that they could start a fire, and defective parts in the personal oxygen tanks. When Barnett filed ethics complaints, he says Boeing fought back with negative performance reviews and keeping him from transferring out of Boeing South Carolina. Barnett also said he was harassed, humiliated, and treated with scorn and contempt by upper management. John Barnett stated that he took an early retirement due to the hostile work environment. He was in the middle of depositions in this case when he was found dead. The coroner says from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, but the case is expected to go to trial this summer.
There it is. And as we do here in America, shut up or I'll kill you.
That's about, well, in South Carolina, it could be an issue.
Yeah.
We did, I did get a note from one of our producers that is a pilot for 787.
Oh.
And he says about the rebooting, he says the three redundant computers that do have to be rebooted every, and he had a figure of hours, and they just do that. And if they all go out, the plane just returns completely to manual control, and it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, well, that sounded like that was just some passenger saying something.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, and probably trying to move focus away from whatever really happened. Blame it on Boeing. Blame it on Boeing. Hey, yes.
Well, since we were talking about language, I get these two clips out of the way.
Okay.
These are irked gays.
It's my favorite kind of gay.
Now, the first one is a clip of an irked gay male commenting on a gaslighting trans dude, or I don't know, a they, them. I don't know what this person is, but this guy's commenting on them.
Yeah, I'm not participating in pronouns anymore. We're not doing that.
Yeah, it's impossible. In fact, there was my favorite clip was the one where it said, I change my pronoun every day. Okay, well, then you can screw yourself.
Tina was talking to someone the other day. interesting, when she was flying back from Florida. She sat next to a lady and she said, you know, half the kids in she said she has an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old. She says the difference in 5 years, which, of course, a lot of that was COVID. Like the 18-year-olds.
That's 3 years, but okay.
3 years. What? Did I say 15?
18 and 15. 15. Three.
Okay. 3 years. What the year is COVID? That, you know, the 18-year-old's peers are still kind of okay, but the 15-year-old, half the class identifies as queer, non-binary, yes, or trans. They all do. And the kids, the minute a kid switches, they're right. The kids switch. Oh, this is she. And they just say her and she and. The programming is so strong. And of course, these kids aren't all queer and gay and non-binary and trans. They just don't want to be one thing, straight, because they've been told that's a problem. You're problematic.
Yep.
All right. And
so here's a guy bitching about another guy, and here we go. Gay gaslighting.
LGBTQ people attacking other LGBTQ people is probably coming out of feeling bullied.
Nope.
Othered.
Mm-mm.
Traumatized.
No.
Not wanting to upset dad. Not wanting other people like us to confuse the straights. And therefore, it feels like a life and death issue. Like your dad not being able to understand you and being violent with you, maybe?
Daddy issues? Like, really? So Jeffrey is saying that people like myself who call out the disgusting behavior happening inside the LGBTQ community and under our umbrella have daddy issues? We are not bullying gay people because we have daddy issues. We are exposing people hiding in our community who exhibit highly suspicious behavior regarding children. If you act like a pedophile and say it's all about rainbow love and acceptance, well, we are going to call you out. Recognize the level of gaslighting happening here. The reality is people like myself are fighting tooth and nail to, number one, protect children from creeps like you who hide underneath the rainbow umbrella, and number two, save our community before we wind up back where we started.
Yeah.
The back where we started thing is an interesting theme. Hmm. And I think it's starting to show up here and there. And this whole, there's an undercurrent of revolution taking place in the LGBTQ blah 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 community, if there is one. And I think this one is another evidence is this particular clip, which is the pissed off lesbian.
Hate to say I told you so, but they want to get rid of regular gay lesbians now because being gay or lesbian is racist and everyone should be trans now. The organization GLAAD, which is a trans activist organization, is now saying that being gay or lesbian is just a subcategory of being trans. They removed biological sex from the equation and replaced it with gender. So you're no longer gay or a lesbian, you are same gender loving. But what is gender? So these are the new terms to erase gay people and have everyone be trans now, because you are no longer gay, you are attracted to masculinity, and you are no longer a lesbian, you are just attracted to femininity. But why would they do this? Because it validates men. It validates men. Because it validates men who identify as women who claim that they're lesbians. It validates their identity. How far can they actually take this? Like, this is why the LGB needs to be separated from the T. Because on one side, you have an orientation, and on the other side, you have mental illness. Yeah, you heard me right. I said what I said.
I'd recommend a podcast for you, John, and for anyone else who's interested, the Disaffected podcast. Which is a pissed off gay guy who talks about this and talks about the mental illness. And he's it's a good podcast. He talks about cluster B and typical, it's narcissistic personality disorder. That's what all this is, enhanced by drugs sold to you through social media.
Ah,
particularly
a callback. TikTok.
Yeah, I'm good at that.
So I just found,
yeah,
there is clips. Something going on, and there's a new symbol they have, and she uses it, which is instead of LGBTQ,
yeah, LGB,
LG with a scissors emoji, TQ.
Oh, you cut it. Okay, I got it. LG,
so that, and this is, I think this is a real trend.
Oh, it is. Oh, but hey, haven't I warned about this? But it kept saying, oh, the LGBTQ community. But I've always said, there's no community. There's not a community.
No, there's no community.
The anywhere. L and the G's barely get along together.
There's barely there's a no agenda meetup community. That's about as that's close about as you're going to get.
There is, however, something apocalyptic on our horizon, John. There is something very bad about to happen. We've been tracking this throughout the progress of this show, and now a rare double event.
Ah, spring. The birds are back. The flowers are back. But for the first time in centuries, billions of cicadas are also about to be back.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Coming.
17 and 13 doesn't overlap too often.
As entomologist Dr. Frank Krell was alluding to there, in a few weeks, the brood of cicadas that emerges every 13 years and the brood that emerges every 17 years are going to pop out of the ground at the same time, which last happened in 1803. Some are even calling this spring and summer the cicada apocalypse.
What should we do when there are millions of them here all of a sudden?
Oh, just enjoying them. Or going away if we don't enjoy them. They are not harmful.
Well, they may not be that harmful, but cicadas are still quite the loud neighbor for the 4 to 6 weeks that they move into your backyard. Some cicadas can even reach over 100 decibels.
Why are cicadas so loud? What are they talking about?
They're talking about girls.
Yes, according to Dr. Frank, we're just going to have billions of males audibly competing with each other to grab the attention of the female cicadas.
When they come out, they have to be quick. Before they get eaten, they have to find a mate and mate.
Now, to be clear, it's mostly the 13-year cicadas impacting the South and Appalachia, while the 17-year cicadas hit the Midwest. But in states like Illinois, they might get both in the same forests. Sorry, guys.
Also, it's about to get real wet, apparently, because according to the National Academy of Sciences, a new study finds that cicadas have the fastest urination velocity in the world at 3 meters per second. That's more than elephants and horses, so I think the Windy City's about to get real fun this summer.
Well, that part I didn't know.
I didn't know that either. Cicada apocalypse. But I think we should capitalize on this. And
we've had producers that suggested this.
Well, we could somehow. Yeah, but we have a publishing company now. We need a cicada cookbook.
Oh God.
No, just a thought.
You know, there is I think we could put a couple of cicada recipes in the newsletter.
Okay.
If anyone has any good ones, but yeah. I wouldn't have it. I mean, now that you mention, I know that people do eat these things.
Yeah, see.
Uh-huh. It's just, it tastes like lobster.
No, it does not.
Yeah.
It tastes like lobster. Oh, okay.
I don't know what it tastes like. It probably tastes more
you've
like.
You've heard of lobster from the sea? It's lobster from the tree.
There you go. Mm-hmm. You already got a jingle.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I can't even get you to jump on board with Slender Mint. I mean, I'm just throwing out exit strategies left and right here.
You are full of them. The problem is with the cicada thing, it only comes and goes.
Right. That's why it's a delicacy.
You got to move fast.
It's a delicacy. Yes. Of course.
I did read about this, by the way, and there are people that do eat these things. And I'm going to go do more research and get to some of those recipes and post them.
Yeah.
If you live in Chicago.
Darren O'Neill.
And the homeless. They moved all these migrants to Chicago, and there's a lot of homeless there. Yeah,
they can eat it.
This is an opportunity. It's not a rat.
Bugs. Tastes like
was
poo.
Texas news.
I got Texas news. I have Texas news for you. I got some real Texas news. We're in the news.
So the eclipse is coming, right? April 8th. So small budget hotels in Texas, this is from Bloomberg, they are charging more than $1,000 a night for a room because people are flocking to these small Texas towns. And that is 8 to 10 times more than what they normally charge for. So they're sparking up these prices. Texas, which I didn't know this, why are they going to Texas? It's because it has a lower chance of cloud cover. Oh. So that's why people go to Texas to see this.
So it's April 8th. So the Wine Country Inn in Frederick, a hill country town in the zone of totality.
Okay.
Where eclipse viewing will be at its best April 8th, once $1,288 with taxes for a king.
Crazy.
So, I don't know. What are we seeing here? I'm seeing like an eclipse or something?
An eclipse, yes. But if you miss it, here's the thing. There won't be another one covering like such a large part of the country until 2045.
See? They're always saying that the next year there's another eclipse.
What?
They always do that.
Yeah, but this is
my whole life. It's been, this will be, you'll never see another eclipse in your entire life if you miss this one.
But we're in the zone of totality.
Yeah, you've always been in the zone of totality.
This is true. Gene is coming. I told you Gene is coming, right? Sir Gene?
Yeah, he's going to pay $1,000 to stay in your house.
No. We've turned all kinds of people down. Hey, can I jack up
the price? I think you're going the wrong way.
We're worried about fires. People are going to be camping everywhere. And Gene's coming. He's bringing his shotgun, his AR-15, his handguns, his thermal vision, and his night vision. So we can pop him off the land.
Good.
Gene's the guy you want in a case like this.
Let's listen to these clips on the Texas immigration law. This would be the first clip, which is Texas immigration law clowns.
Oh, clowns. Hold on a second. There we go.
It was last night here. We reported the Supreme Court had cleared the way for Texas to move ahead with its own new immigration law, making arrests and deportations on its own, at least for now. Well, tonight that law is back on hold amid questions and confusion over how to enforce it. ABC's Berea Villarreal from El Paso tonight.
Tonight, uncertainty at the southern border with the law that would allow Texas to arrest, deport, or imprison anyone they believe may have entered the U.S. illegally, now in legal limbo.
We are not going to prioritize this. We are unfamiliar with federal immigration law. That's not our job responsibility.
You know this has already been blocked, right? Did you know that?
That's what we're talking about.
Well, but it was blocked. The Supreme Court unblocked it. And this morning, the lower court blocked it again.
Yeah, that's what this clip is about.
No, it didn't sound like it. Okay.
No, if you listen to it again, it said the Supreme Court let it go and it got blocked again by the Fifth Circuit.
Fifth Circuit, yes.
Yeah, that's what this is. But what is interesting on that clip, which does say what you just said, it's this guy at the end, which is a law enforcement guy saying, I don't know, we don't really want to do this.
We don't.
No, they don't want to do it. They do. They care probably, but they don't want to do it because it's off.
That's not what Abbott is saying.
Well, Abbott can say what he wants, and we got Abbott in this clip, too. Let's go to part two.
Two. Got it.
Overnight, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the law known as SB4 could temporarily take effect while it was challenged in a lower court of appeals. Hours later, that appeals court blocked the Texas law again in anticipation of oral arguments on the case today. The legal whiplash leading to confusion and frustration in border communities like El Paso.
It's a racial profiling issue as well, and that's our concern. Our department has been very, very fortunate to not have any racial profiling complaints for several years, and we want to maintain that standard.
Yeah, I'm
another cop, this time in El Paso, going on about racial profiling as if that's a concern.
Well, it is.
Yeah, well, I guess it is, or he wouldn't have brought it up. But it's like, okay, so you don't want to do anything either. So in other words, Texas is all talk, but the law enforcement operations down there don't want to have anything to do with any of this.
Excuse me. You're talking about El Paso, El Tardo, okay? El Paso, they're the ones who sent the buses full of protesters up to Austin to protest SB4. El Paso is Beto country, man. That's why they're all like that.
It doesn't sound like Texas to me. Let's play
part. It's not El Paso. Three. Is not. It's like Austin. It's like Austin on the border.
Part three.
Some officials in San Antonio, Fort Worth, and Austin also voicing their concerns. But tonight, Governor Greg Abbott standing firm, saying Texas has the right to defend itself as DPS troopers and state guardsmen along the border prepare.
They will continue to use every tool and strategy they can to arrest people, jail these people crossing the border.
David, despite the battle over SB4 here in El Paso and all along the southwest border, there has been a sharp decrease in the number of migrant apprehensions. We're seeing about 4,000 a day, and that is a big decrease from what we saw, those record-breaking numbers back in December.
Yeah, that's the true result of this, is that people are not coming over the border anymore. They're flying still, I'm sure, but the word is out. It's a pain in the butt. You don't want to go. It has decreased. There's an interview out there with an Uber driver who's also a podcaster. I should get a clip of her.
Who isn't?
I don't know which comes first. You're a podcaster, then an Uber driver, or you're an Uber driver with a podcast? I'm not sure. And she was making $5,000 a week from people ordering Ubers to go pick people up at the border. And that just disappeared almost overnight. She says it's done. So that is the result, ultimately. So it has some desired effect. But at the end of the day, the federal government is in charge of the border, and they should not allow this to happen.
Well, if you're flying people in up to 300, over 300,000, flying them in from out of the country into our country.
Yes.
And giving them money and a credit card and a phone.
Yes.
It doesn't sound like the federal government really doesn't want them.
No, they want them, and I have some proof here why they want them. Actually, I got a note from a banker. Actually, hold on a second. Let me read this. Boots on the ground.
Another banker?
Yes. Well, ITM, Adam and John, I'm a career banking professional. I'm not an insider.
Sorry to hear that.
No way. He qualifies it. I'm a career banking professional. I'm not an insider, but I'm an advisor to the insiders. So this is what you want. A name withheld for obvious reasons. I've heard you connect bankers and mass migration. I think you're onto something. The goal here, though, is to get wage inflation in check so we can go back to irresponsible monetary policy. Central banks do not control inflation because it's bad for society. No, they control inflation because it's terrible for banks. You can't lend money at an interest rate that is lower than inflation or you'll go bankrupt. But interest rates also can't go up. Everyone is so indebted from 20 years of near zero interest rates. Raising them more will drive a wave of defaults and banking collapses. Think SVB. What kind of inflation is bad for banks? Well, asset inflation is good for banks because it increases their investments and also strengthens the value of collateral held against loans. Wage inflation is what the banks worry about. So how do we keep the party going? Mass immigration. Assets go up, wages go down. It's highly possible it's a global banking conspiracy because this wave of immigration is coinciding in highly indebted Western democracies around the world. How? They do it through lobbyists by complaining about worker shortages causing inflation, by threatening the government with stress test reports, and directly via their own insiders like Janet Yellen. And here's an example of this wage control from NBC.
In major cities across America, officials say they've reached a breaking point, struggling to handle the record number of arriving migrants. But here in small town Fremont, Nebraska, where there are just 39 workers for every 100 job openings, some are encouraging even more legal migrants to come.
We need these people. We need this work done. This is what feeds the nation and the world.
Many of the openings are at this $500 million chicken plant, opened in 2019. Young locals often move away, leaving those slaughterhouse jobs to migrants like Vicente Hernandez.
With Hispanic migrants, although it is hard, although it is heavy, they endure, he says. The difference with an American citizen is that every time he finds a job, when he sees it is hard, he leaves it, he says. Hernandez and his wife are also pastors to the growing Guatemalan community. Once this town of 27,000 was nearly all white. Now, one out of six are Latino. Since 2018, the school district added almost 800 non-English-speaking students.
In Nebraska. It's great.
Yeah.
It's such a border town, Nebraska. Of course, they are living the American dream.
Meatpacking is the biggest industry here in Fremont. The state's Chamber of Commerce says Nebraska needs to welcome more migrants to fill jobs like these. But some residents here are resistant to that change.
Voters backed a town ordinance twice, which says locals must tell the city that they are here legally before they can rent housing. The city cannot always verify the information, but people say the law remains on the books to send a message. Councilman Paul Van Baron supports it.
Why was it brought up?
Citizens had asked the city council to do something because it was pretty obvious that we were become a haven for illegals.
He argues slaughterhouses paying low wages to migrants lowers incomes for citizens and criticizes increased costs for migrant children at local schools.
The sheer pressure of bringing in numbers of people has resulted in a considerable burden to the taxpayers.
But City Councilman Mark Jensen, who's lived in the area since he was 10 years old, is against that ordinance.
It's a bad look for our city.
And he says Fremont needs to embrace change.
Immigration is crucial. A lot of people that live and grew up here don't stay. They move out. It's critical for us to have the people that we've got here.
Back at the church, Vicente tells us he regularly gets about 3 hours of sleep a night. But still, he and his wife Maria say they found their new hometown. Now I live the American dream, as they call it. I'm happy because I have everything, she tells us.
State officials say they often have problems with undocumented workers using fake IDs. Just this month, four migrants were charged with using them to get slaughterhouse jobs.
Yeah. Headline from March 18th, wages in the U.S. are falling at a striking pace.
We have a president, Joe Biden, who promotes unionisms, good paying union jobs. And this is what he gives us. This is the same kind of flip-flop, it's a switcheroo, where he, you know, talks about cutting fossil fuels, but yet he pumps more oil than Trump did.
Right, but we're threatening the wrong people.
Everything is bull crap with these guys.
We're threatening the wrong people. We're threatening politicians, but we should be threatening bankers. You want to see stuff change? Go
well, the Democrat Party is the party of bankers now. It has been.
Yeah.
It has been since Clinton.
Yeah. It's the bankers, man. It's the bankers. They're doing it.
Good paying union jobs, my ass. Dignity.
Just getting by. So you can retire. Oh, where's that Obama clip?
That's a good one.
Just getting by. Here we go. I have it here.
All right. It's Thursday, July.
No, that's not it. I thought, oh, man. Oh, the Obama American dream.
In the end, the folks I hear from in letters or meet when I travel across the country, they aren't asking for much. They're just looking for a job that covers their bills. They're looking for a little financial security. They want to know that if they work hard and live within their means, everything will be all right. They'll be able to get ahead and give their kids a better life. That's the dream each of us has for ourselves and our families. And so long as I have the privilege of serving as president, I'll keep fighting to put that dream within the reach of all Americans. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, that's the American dream.
Good work, Obama. Yeah, thanks, Obama.
That's the American dream. Just getting by. Just getting by.
I have a quasi-Ask Adam clip.
Okay.
Which is it's not a technical one, but I just wanted to play the clip and then ask you a question. This is the missing student in Nashville, which everybody's covering.
We turn now to the search for that missing college student last seen on surveillance and police video in Nashville. That search now intensifying tonight. This evening here, the new turn. The search expanding now beyond Nashville. Authorities have now shut down a dam, and ABC's Faith Abube in Nashville for us.
It's
tonight, the search for Riley Strange stretching beyond Nashville. Authorities shutting down a dam to search through debris 30 miles downstream from the riverbank where the missing college student was last seen. His family is still hopeful, but bracing for the worst.
Put yourself in our shoes. Everybody knows it. Everybody's thinking it. Those conversations are starting to happen. It's not what we want.
In Nashville, the United Cajun Navy searching the Cumberland River. It's been nearly 2 weeks since Riley vanished during a fraternity trip. After he was asked to leave this downtown bar, he was seen stumbling and falling before appearing to recover, then briefly chatting with a police officer.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
You found his credit card? We couldn't find his credit card.
Riley's debit card found on the riverbank, a 15-minute walk away from that bar. Instead of heading to his hotel, his family thinks he got disoriented.
We think he got turned around when he came out. Why? I mean, I can't answer. I don't know. I don't know why.
And David, police say witnesses in the unhoused community reported seeing Riley by the river, but they do stress that at this time there's no evidence of foul play.
I love the unhoused community down by the river. In a van by the river. So what do you want to ask me?
Why is this a story on national news at all? There are, you know how many people are that go missing every year in the United States? You could just give me a ballpark figure.
Oh, of all ages?
Yeah.
100,000.
600,000 people go missing. 4,000 dead bodies appear out of the blue from this sort of missing problem. It's the numbers are staggering in every area of the country. So I'm asking you, as the Ask Adam, why does this one story, as opposed to probably 10,000 around the country at this moment of missing people, why does this get picked up and run by all the networks?
Because this is a non-color person. This is it.
Of the 600,000, I think most of them are non-colored. But
I don't know about that.
But one way or the other.
Maybe he had an extra supply of adrenochrome that they're making from these people.
They're trying to find him.
That guy's got the best adrenochrome. We got to find that kid.
I just like to know what at the editor's desk, why this story?
Well, how about this? To distract you from all the other stuff. It's a human interest story that you can relate to. Oh, my child. Oh, my child. Meanwhile, it's another kid who sadly is just plastered. Our nation is plastered. We're plastered.
So this kid was plastered. They show video. The thing that it was a presentation you could make because they had a lot of videos of him walking down the street drunk.
Plastered.
Plastered, literally. I suppose that makes it a better story, but I am just stunned by the fact that they can pick one story out of 600,000. Actually, they maybe pick about five a year. And the others go, they rest languish. I would assume that somebody in someplace else just, you know, their daughter's been missing for a month and they can't get any attention.
They're probably,
I just find it weird.
They're probably hoping that they find this kid within just a couple weeks and then there'll be a good news segment on the No Agenda show. They're like, wow, we can make the podcast. I don't know. I do know that we're a plastered nation. I was at Java Ranch on Main Street here. It's a coffee shop. It's just an old school coffee shop.
What time in the morning were you?
11 a.m. I play chess with a guy on Tuesday mornings.
This is right. I see you at the park.
No, it's not the park. It's
no, but it should be at the park.
No, but
do you have the timer?
We don't have the timer.
Oh,
no, we don't use it. But we have 2 hours, and we'll play two games in 2 hours. And so I'm always talking to the kids behind the bar. They're like, yeah, they're mid-20s, guy and a girl. They're the baristas, but it's just a, you know, you get. Yeah, you can get fancy coffee, but it's a coffee joint.
Sure.
And I was like, how's it going? Oh, she says, oh man, spring break. It was the worst. I said, what do you mean? She says, people were in here at 11 a.m. completely plastered. Their kids are crawling on the floor, getting waterboarded by cappuccinos. He said,
Who goes to Fredericksburg for spring break?
We are one of only six cities in America that allows open container on the street.
Oh.
And we have 300 wineries, which of which five have grapes and the rest are drinking barns.
Ah.
We've become a plastered destination.
It's funny.
It's not funny. It's Brooks Bubble Bus is a problem. The worst, the worst is the bridesmaids. See, everyone comes out here because they're great, great wedding venues. So you go to, you get married, but then they stay in the, what are you drinking? That sounded good.
Well, you made me thirsty.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking Dram.
Dram? DRAM? Yeah, Dram. Like DRAM?
Dram, DRAM. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's dynamic RAM, citrus and blossom flavor, herbal sparkling water.
Oh, I am drinking another Waterloo. I was tipped off by a producer to try the blackberry lemonade.
Which is a bit intense to me.
It doesn't taste at all like anything. But it, remember, it has, it's naturally flavored, which means contains chemicals. Natural flavors.
Has electrolytes.
Natural flavors is a group of chemicals, but it sounds good. So they come out here for their wedding. They stay. We have 25% of the homes here are short-term rentals, i.e. Airbnb, which is a problem, which is a real problem. And then we have these big pink limos and a big pink school bus, and they pick up the bridesmaids and they drive them off to some winery. They all get plastered and they walk around the street with inflatable dildos. It's a mess.
What?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it's a mess. It's a mess.
Well, I think you should take action.
Yes. Well, I go to council meetings and zoning board meetings. You bet it. You bet I do. You bet I do.
This is all news to me.
Yeah. Well, that's what Fredericksburg is slowly becoming, and a lot of people are unhappy. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. You sent an article to me about Mike Johnson, which was fascinating. Inside Mike Johnson's ties to a far right movement to gut the Constitution.
Yeah, they want to gut the Constitution.
Now, did you read that whole article?
Yeah, of course I did.
Did you see that my buddy Rick Green is in that article?
Yeah, that's why I sent it to you.
I didn't realize that. I'm like, hold on a second. The guy I just met, Rick Green, is all over this thing.
Yeah.
So this Constitution of States is kind of a cool idea.
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
Yeah, well, for one thing, it seems like a pipe dream. They're never going to get it together. And it's not much different than Zakari and some of these other crackpots that want to do this. Becomes a constitutional convention. They could
screw up
the Constitution, and that's what they'll do.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
To screw up the Constitution? No, we don't need that aggravation.
To change it, to get rid of stuff like that, like pass an amendment real quick. There shall be no FDA.
The fastest way to get amendments through.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. But I'm all for it.
Well, one of the things they'll try to get through if they ever got this thing together.
We're going to divorce California. I'm all in on this. Constitution of States, everybody. Convention of States. Yeah. Sorry, Convention of States.
they're going to do the constitutionally demanded balanced budget.
Oh.
And there goes the economy.
Yeah, that's dumb. No, that stuff is dumb.
It's something they should have done.
Nah, that'll never work. And we could know that'll never happen.
It's happened before. The budget was balanced during the Clinton administration when the Republicans were running Congress and Clinton was all in. The Republicans are the ones who did it. Clinton gets credit for it.
Mm.
But they balanced the budget. They went through, whoop. Yeah, we didn't have to borrow a bunch of money. We didn't screw up. It was fine. And that wasn't that long ago. And it could have been done time after time. But there's always something. Bullcrap war. Usually it's a bullcrap war. And then when Trump got in, when they stopped the bullcrap wars, they came with the bullcrap COVID. So you can't win.
speaking of Trump, I'm going to take us back to August of 2019. Do we all remember this?
On Sunday, Trump confirmed to reporters his interest in purchasing the autonomous Danish territory and did not rule out trading a U.S. territory for the island. Trump said, essentially, it's a large real estate deal. Danish politicians across the political spectrum expressed disbelief over Trump's sudden cancellation of the state visit. The Danish prime minister, Mette Frederiksen, called his idea to purchase Greenland absurd. She also told reporters, thankfully, the time where you buy and sell other countries and populations is over.
Remember that? He's like, I'm gonna.
It was a great idea.
It turns out you're right, and he was right.
Located between the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans, Greenland is the world's largest island. Despite its name, the country is not entirely green. In fact, much of it is covered in ice and snow. And beneath lies a hidden treasure trove of rare earth minerals, which are key to production of a range of green technology, from electric cars to wind turbines. As the climate crisis accelerates, ice shelves are melting faster than a popsicle on a summer's day, and the island has found itself in the spotlight like never before. In 2019, then-President Donald Trump said he will be interested in buying the Danish autonomous territory for the United States in order to tap one of the world's largest reserves of rare earth minerals. And last week, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen inaugurated an EU office in Greenland's capital, Nuuk, to mark Europe's presence in the territory.
So they just dropped a couple billion dollars into Greenland to open up an office.
Yeah.
They usurped us.
Well, nobody helped. Nobody helped. Nobody got behind the Trump idea.
No, Trump's crazy. Orange
they
man bad.
Nuts.
Yeah. And of course, as I say, we're all complaining about all the problems we have. But meanwhile, the climate change nonsense creeps up slowly. This is how they're really going to get us if we don't stop it.
Spring is here, at least officially, and that means an end to what has been the warmest winter on record, according to the new data out today. That's not a good thing. It's, in fact, why we've been seeing those gigantic storms lately. And our meteorologist, Stephanie Abrams, over with our partners at the Weather Channel, is going to join us now to walk us through everything, explain what's going on here. Steph, good morning.
Yeah, hottest on record.
Tony, good morning. NOAA's report shows the planet actually just had its warmest December to February
it's
on
melting.
Record. Global temp.
Yes.
So we're nearly 2.5 degrees above the 20th century average. It's a concerning trend, with 9 of the top 10 warmest winters occurring in just the last decade. Here in the U.S., 13 states saw their warmest or second warmest winter on record, leaving the Great Lakes mostly ice-free and allowing for back-to-back lake effect events in January. Western New York was buried in 4 to 7 feet of snow. The Buffalo Bills turned to their fans to help them shovel out Highmark Stadium ahead of the playoffs. In mid-February, when the ice typically maxes out, it dropped to less than 3%, a new record low. The Western U.S. was one of the wettest regions in the world in February. Parts of California got 3 times their monthly rainfall. The extreme deluge triggered nearly 600 mudslides in Los Angeles in just the first week. Looking ahead through May, above average warmth is expected for the northern tier, with heavier rain in the southeast. Tony, the latest report from the UN World Meteorological Organization says the climate crisis is a defining challenge that humanity faces.
No, it's a lie. And weather's not climate until it was. You're
they
lying.
They used to always say it was not climate. Now they start to say it is.
They're lying. Yeah. And finally, someone got caught. It's nice that it was KLM, the Royal Dutch Airlines, got caught greenwashing. So how this works is when they say net zero, it's not zero carbon, by the way, it would be carbon dioxide, but we've just changed that to carbon now. And zero carbon would mean no humans, because we are by default made of carbon.
We're carbon.
Net zero means that you buy credits. Give us some credit, man. We'll buy credits by buying up pieces of Africa or some other place and just saying, hey, it's a carbon sink. It's a carbon sink. Well, KLM marketed this to their customers, and they were caught lying about it.
It's a celebration for climate activist group Fossil Free after a Dutch court ruled that national airline KLM had misled customers with its 2019 Fly Responsibly campaign. According to the court, 15 out of KLM's 19 environmental claims were misleading. It had inflated the benefits of its sustainable aviation fuel, and it had given the mistaken impression that flying with KLM is sustainable.
We've been working on this case for 2.5 years, and then finally have this very clear decision of the court saying that it's illegal for companies to claim they are tackling the climate crisis, while in reality they are fueling the crisis.
The court, however, did not impose any punishments on KLM, nor push for it to issue any statement of rectification, aside from being concrete and honest in future.
Now, boys, just be honest from now on, okay? I don't even know how to stop this anymore. People make jokes about it, and people don't believe in it, just go, whatever. But there's going to come a day when your credit card won't work, and they're going to say, sorry, no beef for you, if there's any available, because you drove too much. That's happening.
Well, talking about beef being available, let's play these clips. This is China taking over the world's food supply.
There it is.
Experts say China is trying to take over America's food supply. At a House hearing today, lawmakers heard testimony on risks to U.S. food security. NTD's Virginia Gibson has more.
I have witnessed this hostile communist country work to systematically take over our food supply chain.
Governor Kristi Noem told lawmakers Wednesday that China is a threat to American agriculture.
They have decades ago started buying our fertilizer companies, controlling our ability to access fertilizer, bring it into the United States. Then I watched them buy up our chemical companies. Now most of our processing facilities are owned by the Communist Party or Chinese government. Now they are coming for our land.
Noem said that China will have complete control of the U.S. food supply after they buy up all the land.
70% of the crop protection products that are produced globally, most from China. Another 40% of the world's phosphorus supply originates in China. Imagine if they shut off our supply.
Kip Tom is a former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. agencies for food and agriculture. He said China is strategically building a dominant world food system at the expense of the U.S.
No, the U.S. and the global companies like Cargill and JBS,
yeah, no kidding.
They're the ones who are controlling the food supply, and they're closing processing plants, and they're selling their capability to China. China's not sneaking in and taking over.
I agree with this, and I don't understand where Kristi Noem's coming from. She's trying to make a name for herself because she thinks she can be the vice president under Trump.
Yeah, it's dishonest. We have a problem. Beefinitiative.com, everybody. Shake your local rancher's hand if you want to eat during the coming food crisis.
This is part two of the clip.
The Chinese are aggressive in their approach in investing in a lot of these developing nations to make sure they can secure a food source.
Tom said China is investing all around the world, largely to secure food sources. Africa has 4.2 million square miles of arable land, while the U.S. has less than 600,000. Tom says he believes the U.S. should invest more in research and development and cybersecurity.
What? Further, China's massive cyber warfare divisions, notably PLA Unit 61398, have the capability to disrupt key American infrastructure critical to our agriculture. This includes power and water utilities, as well as communication and transportation systems.
Policy expert Nova Daly said this critical infrastructure is exposed because of gaps in current laws.
Given the advances in farm technologies, our reliance on supply chains that provide nefarious Chinese actors kill switches to our machinery, our eyes, or our production, these all are matters that should be addressed.
Now, okay, so this is clearly more anti-China rhetoric because we're doing that pivot to the Indo-Pacific away from Ukraine and Russia. And again, it's the massive international global companies owned by the U.S. and the U.K. who control the food supply, and they now control a large swath of land. It's not the Chinese who went into Ukraine. No, we hijacked it. We sold off all of that farmland to, again, the same companies, Cargill, Monsanto, and now we're screwing the farmers all over the EU.
Since June 2022, after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine,
Full scale invasion.
Since June 2022, after Russia's full scale invasion of Ukraine, the EU has suspended import duties and quotas for imports from Ukraine to support its economy. However, cheap Ukrainian grain exports have sparked protests by farmers in neighboring countries such as Poland and Hungary. The Ukrainian Prime Minister today, Denis Shmyhal, has welcomed this deal, but France, which is the EU's largest wheat producer, has called for more limits to be introduced and more cereals to be included, including wheat. It takes place against the run-up to the European elections, and many countries, including France, which of course has a strong farming lobby, have to balance the concerns of their agricultural sector while maintaining their commitment to supporting Ukraine.
And it's hurting the Polish farmers, who are also hacked off.
Protests right across Poland. The police in Poland estimate that as many as 70,000 Polish farmers are taking part in this.
This is big, but 70,000. This is huge.
That's a lot.
Taking place right now.
Protest, essentially mainly blocking major roads and ring roads around cities with their tractors in almost 600 locations across the country. It's the fourth time such a protest has happened so far this year. So causing considerable traffic disruption throughout the country. But at the same time, the public here has considerable sympathy for their demands.
Indeed. I mean, Poland, like a lot of other nations in Europe, have to tread a fine line, support Ukraine whilst not upsetting your own farmers back home. To what extent will this move by the European Union have placated Polish farmers, do you think?
A bit, but not enough. The Polish government, which actually backs the farmers' key demands, will be happy that more Ukrainian products can be restricted, but it wanted caps to kick in once imports reach levels seen in 2021, i.e. before Ukraine had tariff-free access to the EU market, when Ukrainian imports to Poland were much lower. Plus, the farmers themselves want an immediate suspension of tariff-free access for all Ukrainian agricultural imports, because they say family-run farms in Poland simply can't compete against big Ukrainian agribusiness. And they have a second demand. They also want EU climate proposals that they say will raise Polish farmers' costs thrown out.
Yeah, there it is. There's your climate change screwing the farmers. There's the global international cabal that took over Ukraine, screwing the farmers, giving it all to the big multinationals. But no, it's China. Oh, it's China. Meanwhile, there's news on the Russia front. DMZ.
Put a time code.
Demilitarized zone looks like it's a possible. Oh, wait, before I get there, about Poland. We were wrong. I was wrong, certainly, about Donald Tusk thinking that his twin brother died in that Smolensk accident. In quotes, we have Adam and Anna, boots on the ground in Poland. They said, no. Donald Tusk, yes, he is is the president now, of course, of the Communist Party.
Not really.
Well, Poland. Not that he had a twin brother. He was thought to be an accomplice, though, to the accident of the plane crash in Smolensk in Russia, where half the Polish government perished, including the then president, Lech Kaczynski, who did have the twin brother, Jarosław. And he is still alive and kicking, and Tusk's main opponent up until today. And they have some other fun little details in there about what's going on in Poland with the boots on the ground report in the show notes if you want to read it. Now, back to the demilitarized zone. Looks like it's a possibility.
Speaking in the wake of his electoral victory, Russian President Vladimir Putin threatened that the only way to protect his country was to create a security zone.
We will be forced at some point, when we deem it appropriate, to create a certain sanitary zone in the current territories under Kyiv's regime's control, to create a security zone that will be quite difficult to cross with the means of destruction that the enemy is using, primarily, of course, a foreign manufacturer.
The front line stretches over 1,000 kilometers across eastern and southern Ukraine. The president did not provide further details on how such a zone would be implemented. A Ukrainian presidential aide said the statement was evidence that the war will only escalate.
Now, I don't understand. I heard quite clearly in the report that Putin said a sanitary zone, which I kind of like, that would be under control of the Kiev regime.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Here, listen again.
Security zone.
We will be forced at some point when we deem it appropriate to create a certain sanitary zone in the current territories under Kyiv's regime's control.
Under Kyiv's regime's control.
I didn't hear Kyiv. I don't know what that word was.
It's Kyiv. Kyiv. He's saying Kyiv. Under Kyiv's
To create a certain sanitary zone in the current territories under Kyiv's regime's control.
I hear Kyiv's regime control.
Yeah, I can hear where you could hear that, but I'm not sure that's what he said.
Mm. I like sanitary zone. I just like sanitary zone.
Yeah, we should all have a sanitary zone.
I think I have one somewhere around here. Starts at the door, my sanitary zone. Yes. Yes. See, you got anything else that is burning?
Well, I got a 3x3 about Trump going on about the Jews.
It's time for 3x3, yeah, baby. Experiment by JC.
Makes everybody happy when you hit
comparing stories for ABC, CBS, and NBC. The never ending thing.
That's right, JC takes three. The big story from the three main news networks, are they all digging in the same well? Is it all coordinated propaganda?
They
we'll find out.
Are,
they always are. That's right. Here's your 3x3.
Now, this is the where Trump comes out and says, hey, if you're not voting for me, you're not Jewish.
You ain't Jew.
You ain't Jew. If you're not. He talks. You know how many? He's had like over 200 of these rallies. I mean, yeah, he's going to say dumb shit because he talks for an hour and a half at least, minimum. So, you know, he's just talking.
Yeah.
So let's go to ABC.
Tonight, Donald Trump under fire from some of the nation's top Jewish leaders after saying that any Jewish person who votes for Democrats hates their religion.
Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel would be destroyed.
Today, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the nation's top Jewish elected official, denouncing Trump's comments as reprehensible and dangerous.
To say you hate Israel or your religion because you have one political view over the other is sick, it's hateful. It is unadulterated anti-Semitism.
Second gentleman Doug Emhoff, who was also Jewish, outraged.
This is a disgusting, toxic, anti-Semitic thing to say by anyone, let alone a former president of the United States.
The Anti-Defamation League calling Trump's comments defamatory and patently false. And a White House spokesperson saying there is no justification for spreading toxic, false stereotypes that threaten fellow citizens. None. Late today, Trump doubling down.
I think that the Democrats have been very, very opposed to Jewish people.
So he... So he's going all in on the, I mean, it's literally become a Jew fight because we have, if remember, we had the Biden ad about the bloodbath, and they came right after his bloodbath quote with Jews will not replace us. So now the Jews are a pawn in the presidential race because we've got Genocide Joe.
It's too funny.
It's
but
great.
The way they handle this with letting, you know, Schumer, oh, it's despicable. It's no different than Biden saying you ain't black if you don't vote for me or whatever he said.
If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. That's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is more racist or despicable than anything. Trump is just going on about the possibilities. But let's hear, this is not going to change. Let's go to NBC.
Tonight, former President Trump casting his primary ballot in Florida, doubling down on remarks Democrats are slamming as anti-Semitic.
The Democrats have been very, very opposed to Jewish people. That's true. And to Israel. All you have to do is look at Senator Schumer. What he did with Israel is a disgrace.
After top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer blasted Mr. Trump earlier today.
The former president's comments were utterly disgusting. And a textbook example of the kind of anti-Semitism facing Jews.
Same quote.
Pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope.
What?
Of dual loyalty.
The firestorm began overnight.
Whoa, hold on a second. The dangerous... Oh my God.
Pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope of dual loyalty.
pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope of dual loyalty. What does he mean by that?
It means, are Jews more Jewish than American? I don't know quite what he means, but I think something along those lines is that they have more loyalty toward their religion than they do the country.
No, I thought that this was about, although it doesn't make sense, you know, the way I understand that the dangerous trope is that the Jews in Congress have dual nationality and they're really there for Israel. That's the trope.
I didn't get that.
Okay.
And a textbook example of the kind of anti-Semitism facing Jews, pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope of dual loyalty.
I'm sure we'll have some Jews to weigh in.
The firestorm began overnight when Mr. Trump was asked about Schumer's recent rebuke of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who Schumer said should be replaced in new elections.
Why do the Democrats hate Bibi Netanyahu?
I actually think they hate Israel.
Mr. Trump saying Democrats are being swayed by protests over President Biden's policy on Gaza.
Even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches. And guys like Schumer see that. And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else. Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel. And they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel will be destroyed.
The remarks quickly condemned by the Anti-Defamation League, whose CEO called them defamatory and patently false. The Biden campaign saying, quote, the only person who should be ashamed here is Donald Trump.
Oh, yes. Let me guess, did CBS do the same thing?
Do you think?
Uh-huh.
President Trump is getting bashed again for repeating a comment about Jewish Americans. He told White House reporters yesterday that any Jewish person who votes Democratic is being, quote, disloyal.
In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel.
It was the second day in a row Mr. Trump questioned the loyalty of Jews, a type of attack that anti-Semites often use. The president mentioned it the first time in slamming two congressional Democrats.
Oh, it ended there.
Did?
Yeah, it just ended. Oh, that's too bad.
But something happened in the movie. Mm. Oh, yeah. Yep, too short.
I have some Israel.
Believe me, it was the same.
I have some Israel-Hamas news. Apparently, according to Turkish radio and television, and obviously someone pointed this out to me, that I guess I need to point out that Turkish radio television is not going to be on the side of Israel, which is why I play it. You got to hear everything from around the world.
Yeah.
Not just the 3x3s. You know, this is what we do. We expose Chinese, anti-Chinese, all kinds of stuff. But they say,
news from the Chinese outlets.
They say the reason for Hamas attacking on October 7th was the red heifers. Are you familiar with the red heifers?
Well, okay, I'm going to be in a minute.
Could a Texas cow start Armageddon in the Middle East in April 2024? And what does this have to do with Israel's war on Palestine's Gaza? On the 100-day anniversary of Israel's brutal assault on Gaza, Hamas spokesman Abu Obeida released a video explaining the motivations behind the group's incursion into Israel on October 7th. Alongside Israel's continued occupation of Palestine, he also mentioned the bringing of red cows into the occupied Palestinian territories. Obeida was referring to the plans of numerous right-wing Israeli groups who believe that a red cow must be sacrificed in order for the Jews to progress plans to demolish the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build the fabled Third Temple in its place. It might sound like a conspiracy theory, but hardliner Israeli group the Temple Institute have already purchased and imported 5 red Angus heifers from Texas at a cost of $500,000. They have been grazing in a kibbutz in the occupied West Bank since 2022,
with reports that the sacrifice is planned to take place as early as April 2024. The sacrifice of the red heifer has its roots in the Torah and the Talmud, and it is believed that the ritual is necessary to purify the Jews so that they can pray at the Al-Aqsa compound. The sacrifice will reportedly take place on a plot of land on the Mount of Olives facing the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The cow must be completely red, including its hooves, and must be around 3 years old at the time of sacrifice. Following the sacrifice, the ashes of the cow are due to be mixed with water and used to purify selected Jewish priests and their adherents.
It's about to get exciting. I thought the eclipse was exciting.
You got to get a clip of the day for dredging that up.
Clip of the day.
Please.
It literally popped into the algo. It just, I was looking at a different YouTube video and this YouTube short popped up. Like, wow. This is great.
Well, you got lucky.
This is great.
You got lucky.
Meanwhile, Queen Ursula is throwing money around left and right like they don't need to print anymore. Oh, I'm sorry. That's all they're doing. You know, once it gets really bad there, once it gets really bad in Gaza, the Palestinians have only one way to go. Egypt. Now, what are we going to do about that, Queen Ursula said to herself.
A controversial deal to inject cash into Egypt, mired in its worst economic crisis in nearly 100 years. The European Union's €7.4 billion package includes €5 billion in concessional loans, €1.8 billion for investment, and hundreds of million for bilateral projects like managing migration.
Oh.
The Egyptian president hailed what he called a paradigm shift in his country's partnership with Brussels.
The discussion addressed the importance of continuing to confront common challenges, most notably illegal immigration, as we affirmed our commitment to combating this phenomenon.
Several European leaders attended the signing in Cairo, including from Austria, Cyprus, and Greece. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, whose country is one of the worst affected by surging migration in the Mediterranean, wants to convince migrants not to make the crossing.
The best way is to reaffirm the rights of the citizens in the African continent not to emigrate towards Europe. And there is something that we can do only with development, and it is exactly what we are doing today.
The agreement follows the templates of those Brussels has signed with Tunisia and Mauritania, which pledged funds in return for fortifying their borders. Rights groups say the deals lack any specific human rights guarantees for migrants and asylum seekers. More generally, activists have criticized Western backing for Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who's overseen a crackdown on dissidents from across the political spectrum.
So this is the model now. Just send billions of euros to every country you don't want migrants to come in from. And if you want to get some euros, threaten to go into Europe. This is great. Hey. Hey, it's el-Sisi here in Egypt. Do you want me to send the boats out? No? Give me some money. And they all like, okay. They're just paying for it.
Well, Turkey perfected that.
Oh, Turkey was great at that. By the way, something's banging your mic real bad.
No, it was me.
Oh.
Well, I'm moving stuff around. I banged the mic. I hit it right like this.
Yeah, it's not. It's happened.
I banged it. I banged it. I got the mic. It gets banged. I can't sit here still.
It's happened 10 times.
I'm moving stuff around. I'm trying to get stuff done. Trying to sort things out. And I bang the mic.
Okay. All right. You're forgiven. Oh my goodness. Oh, there it is.
All right. I got a couple. Let's do an update. Let's get the Haiti thing out of the way so we can get people apprised.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the latest on Haiti. Okay.
The other developing story we're following at this hour, the images coming in late today from Haiti. At least 30 Americans choppered out of Port-au-Prince, nearly 1,600 Americans in Haiti, reaching out to the U.S. Embassy. Many want out amid the growing danger there. ABC's Matt Rivers in Haiti again
tonight.
Want
out.
Tonight, this State Department helicopter airlifting Americans out of Haiti. Our team capturing the daring mission. Two choppers flying at least 30 Americans out of Port-au-Prince today after weeks of chaos. And as tensions rise, the government planning to send two helicopters into Haiti every day, hoping to get about 30 citizens out on those flights. And this is what they're fleeing. Gangs overrunning entire neighborhoods, fighting the police.
It's not hyperbole to say that the only thing that's standing in between gangs completely taking over this country are a couple thousand police officers who are risking their lives every single day fighting back against these gangs.
Here in Port-au-Prince, we go meet one of those officers on the front lines, part of a specialized unit fighting the gangs terrorizing this city.
Bonjour. Bonjour.
This officer meeting us indoors, covering his face for his own safety. He tells me the police are outgunned and outmanned. We can't retreat, he says. We can't give up the country to the gangs. I've got no choice.
And David, back to those evacuations. The U.S. State Department saying that nearly 1,600 Americans on the ground right now in Haiti are in touch with the U.S. Embassy as the State Department tries to find more ways to get more Americans out.
I'm disappointed they didn't mention barbecue.
Yeah.
Because he's the new Coney 2012.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the go-to guy.
And you know that cannibal thing? That's from 2021. So some old video. And gaslighting us. Oh, yeah. Barbecues. Men are eating people that they kill. No. No, that's Coney 2012. So when do we get the blue helmets in? What's the next move? Because there's...
Hey, you tell me. Why don't you predict something? I have no idea. I think this thing is completely off the rails. We're not controlling it very well. And now we're trying to flag people out, 30 people at a time, day after day, with 1,600 in line. This is dumb.
Well, the point is there's so much gold, for one, a lot. I mean, you know, I had I'll only play one clip. I had a four-piece special from CBS on the history of Haiti. It's worth playing just at least one of these clips so people kind of get some context. Which goes back to 1492.
The island Haiti shares with the Dominican Republic, Columbus landed here in 1492 and called it Hispaniola, claiming it for Spain. But Haiti eventually became a fabulously rich French colony, its plantations producing much of the world's coffee and sugar. In 1791, the enslaved Africans who worked those plantations revolted. What followed was a 13-year bloodbath. Then, on January 1st, 1804, Haiti traded the French flag for its own. It became the first black republic and abolished slavery. But in 1825, the French came back with gunboats and an outrageous demand, reparations. Haiti had to borrow the money with interest, yes, from France. Instead of building roads and schools and hospitals, Haiti was paying off that debt until 1947.
All right, I'll make a prediction, okay? It just hit me, I'll make a prediction. There will be a TPS. No, that's not a TPS report. It's a temporary protected status for all Haitians to enter the United States for more cheap labor for the bankers. I predict Navy boats going to pick them up. Put it in the book.
That's a good one.
Put it in the book.
You should play the Red Book jingle.
Do we have we don't have a Red Book jingle.
I put one in the show the other day. The Red Book jingle is called Jingle Red Book.
The cover of it was red. They called it the Red Book.
Not really a jingle. It's not really a
good
jingle.
Enough. It's better than no jingle, but
yeah.
I think you might be right because the Haitians are notorious for being hard workers.
Oh, very hard workers. They kick the French
They're
out.
The maids of New York City. Haitians.
Hey, the Democrats, they want more people. They're good with children. They can cook.
Yeah, food is good.
Food is good.
French background doesn't hurt.
That's right.
Food's good. They're hard workers, and they don't like American blacks because we got to get rid of these American blacks. They're no good.
No, No. They're no. Oh man, I did a show with Mo yesterday. It's one to listen to, it's particularly based on that statement you just made.
What?
Well, you know, it's a whole continuation, but he actually says something really interesting. He said the way, you know, he believes there's, and I'm on board with him, there's white supremacy, the operating system of America and of the West. There's white people and then non-white people. And it's too much to go into depth with it. But he says, what you see is the system puts black people out front for when it goes wrong. Letitia James, Fannie Willis, Lloyd Austin, Diddy. I mean, they put all these black people out front of the scandal, and when it all
to
comes
to take a beating,
Mayor Adams,
the mayor,
they take the beating, and it goes, and you look at it, it's like, wow, you're right, and it'll be Joy Reid, trust me, Sonny Hostin, they're all going to take the beating. Well,
Sonny's ditched it; she's moved over. She's actually Spanish,
and now she's a slave owner. Yeah, that's right.
She dodged a bullet.
Smart move. Anyway, we did something on the last show, which was a good call that you made, and we knighted probably the last living aviator who survived the Pearl Harbor attack and theater, and we got several notes, but certainly from his family. They were very, very, very pleased because Sir Higgins, as he was knighted, passed away just a few days later. So he passed away a knight of the No Agenda Roundtable. The family is actually very happy about that. There was a lot of news about this guy. I have a quick clip here.
Yeah, he's famous.
And one of the few remaining survivors of the attack on Pearl Harbor dies at 102. The family of Richard C. Higgins says he passed away Tuesday at his home in Bend, Oregon. He was a radio man assigned to a squadron of seaplanes when Japan attacked December 7th, 1941. I'm Carmen Roberts.
And isn't it fitting that he was a radio man? I mean, the whole thing is just beautiful. I'm glad that you called that. I'm glad we did that. I'm glad that we were able to be a little part. And I'm glad that he passed at home and not in the hospice.
Right. So,
yes.
It's better.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. In the morning to you, the man who put the sea in the cicada apocalypse. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. Dvorak.
Well, good morning to you, Mr. M. Curry. Boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, the Danes and the Knights out there.
Failing. Hey there, trolls, stop Choke moving out. Around. Let me see how many there are. 1552, down 20, down 20. We're down 20 trolls from last Thursday. Down. Well, they're probably still hung over. I think everyone's hung over from St. Patrick's
Day. Oh, yeah, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, they're all plastered. Plastered trolls, everybody. The trolls are in the troll room, trollroom.io. They listen live, and they provide lively conversation and lively comments, sometimes helpful, usually not. But they're trolls. What do you expect? They entertain themselves. That's what they're doing. It's like Soma for ugly people. They're trolls. They listen live at trollroom.io. It's the No Agenda stream. It's 24 hours a day. Darren O'Neill, he's on before us for 2 hours. It's like a radio station. It actually is. You can tune in. There's no commercials. It's all value for value, and everyone kind of brings their built-in audience. It's a beautiful thing. That also works with the modern podcast apps. And the modern podcast apps are kind of cool because... they will alert you when a show goes live, your favorite show. Also, they will alert you within 90 seconds when we publish a brand new podcast. This is something that's that the legacy apps can't do. Oh, they're starting to take some of our features, but they'll never get there. It's all part of the podcast.
90 index. Seconds is remarkable.
It's through a decentralized network called Podping, all developed within this group. It's really quite cool. And today I will promote CurioCaster. CreoCaster is a web app. It's an app that you can use on your desktop, on your phone. It's actually very fast, very snappy, and it has all of those features built. Actually, it has every single feature almost that Podcasting 2.0 has to offer. Find out more at podcasting2.org. It's all open source. There's a lot of men and women who are doing this to keep podcasting a true avenue, the last bastion of free speech, which it is. And we appreciate all the work that they do. We're value for value. That means that we just, everything you just got in the last 2 hours and 40 minutes, there was no charge. We didn't interrupt. Oh, man. Joe's podcast, the Rogan Experience, they've started doing ads now. Oh, man. He just chops in every 15 minutes. It's kind of harsh. Boom. You know what I mean? I mean, it's one way to do it, but... it's a little harsh.
It's unpleasant.
Yeah, unpleasant, that's the word, yeah. I mean, the content is good. I don't know. We prefer our talk uninterrupted. And that, of course, means that we don't make $250 million. No.
No, we don't. We don't even come close.
not even a fraction of that. So instead, we just ask you to return value to us in a number of ways. We have time, talent, and treasure. Which means you can help us out by, well, sending a boots on the ground. Those are incredibly appreciated. You can help out with, well, we have help with servers. We have help with art. Well, artwork, that's a big one. Very controversial, the art that was done by one of our hundreds of artists for the last episode. It was Sir Joho, and he created what I thought was quite funny. Of course, St. Patrick's Day, so we always like to stay in themes when it comes to... The title of the episode, by the way, is Net Buoy, and we were both amazed that Net Buoy is spelled N-E-T, capital B-E-U-I. We had forgotten that. What does it stand for again? Network, Broadcast, Ethernet, Universal Interface or something? I can't remember what it was.
Anyways, I forgot myself.
And Sir Joho for St. Patrick's Day made us... a St. Patrick's Day image with a black Irish, and it said, Happy St. Patrick's Day from Google Gemini, which I thought was pretty funny because of Google Gemini's...
Makes everybody black.
There were people mad. You've never heard of black Irish. You don't know the history. Ireland is the origination of the world. We built
the whole
world.
I've heard of black Irish. This doesn't make the joke any less funny.
Oh, there were some people just going off.
No, I never heard it.
Oh, no, it was on X.
Yeah.
I know. But still, it's like, oh, man, chill out. It's okay. It's just a joke, bro. Whoo. Oh, it was hard. It was hard for these people. We thought it was quite funny. We select these pieces of art from noagendaartgenerator.com, another outstanding example of value for value. We don't run it. Sir Paul Couture runs it, and he's upgraded multiple times throughout the ages, and it's now very swift.
You've got the show numbers reflecting the actual show numbers.
Oh, good. What do you have in your mouth?
I have a lozenge, but it's very slippery elm lozenges.
It's very unprofessional sounding.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. There was a lot of...
But you're right.
There was a lot of St. Patrick's Day art. John, of course, immediately wanted the butt.
I didn't want the butt.
You said, oh, I was like,
no, it was just well done. It was Calipigeon.
You said, I already know which one I like.
And then that's because it was well done. It wasn't because it was the butt. I also liked the girls, the other two women that were cheesecakey.
Do you like, you know, I'm getting complaints. Some women,
I'll bet you are.
I'll tell you what the complaint is. It's universal from women. John's turning it because it's a combination of the cheesecake images and the cussing, which seems to have increased.
I have not cussed.
Oh,
well, how many times did I cuss on today's show?
Today, I don't think a single time, so that's good. But you have increased your cussing, and they think you're turning into a dirty old man.
I am a dirty old man. Give me a break.
I'm
old. I'm a man.
And I'm dirty.
I'm dirty. You know, that Jan's turning into a dirty old man. Okay. That's what you. That's what men look forward to.
Oh man, I don't know which one to choose for the opening clip. There's three of them, right?
Men look forward to becoming dirty old men because you can't be called out. You know, it's like, hey, too bad. I'm gonna, you know, it doesn't go on much longer than this, and just put up with it.
I love you, man. That was great.
It's true.
It's true.
It's true.
It's true. Don't fight it, people. It's what happens. I can't.
And besides
wait.
That, and the good side of it is, I end up with the kind of privileged taste that allows that Calipigian art to be moved forward. Otherwise, it would be, oh no, I might offend some woman. I don't think so.
You're making me cry. This is why people need to stick around for the donation segment. This is the best. Oh man. Well, we had a lot of art. The Calipigius art obviously was discussed. I kind of liked, what did I like? I like comic strip bloggers, AI generated, no agenda kind of shamrock coin. That was nice. Then he had a dog peeing. No, that was not nice.
I liked the Time Treasure by Nestworks with the girl holding the green beer. I thought that was pretty less, you know, offensive than the one I liked.
Let me see. Where was that one?
Yeah, right above it.
Yeah.
I pushed for that piece, but we couldn't resist. I mean, at the and I'll say it, at the end of the day, we went with the funny piece. We always choose humorous over even great art, usually, which would take the humor unless it's really schlocky.
Yeah. Now, I thought it was borderline,
but it wasn't quite schlocky enough.
No, but I thought this was a funny joke. Happy
Saint it was Patrick a funny joke.
From Google Gemini. We liked it a lot. Thank you very much to Sir Joho for doing that for us, and to all the artists who participate and are always trying to score a win. We love you very much. And noagendaartgenerator.com, you can find all of the submissions there. They also wind up on good merch over at the store, the noagendashop.com. And you can always participate yourself. You can open up an account and get to it and start rocking away. And also, all of these images rotate in the chapters that Dreb Scott puts together for us in the modern podcast apps. Now to go to the treasure to thank our executive and associate executive producers. These are real credits. They are lifetime credits. You can use them anywhere credits are recognized, which is typically show business circles. We're proud to give these out. You can even open up an IMDb account if anyone questions your motives. It's real. And if anyone wants to know how real they are, we'll be happy to vouch for you. We kick it off with a switcheroo from Druana Kuster. She's in Helena, Montana. $1,000. She's got a blue box here, which means there is a ceremony in place. Hello, Adam and John. Switcheroo. Greetings from Montana. Please use this donation to knight my brother Brian. And her brother, Brian, needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
All right. So I'm just going to presume it is Brian Kuster. Kuster. So I'm making that change now. I hit him in the mouth about a year ago, and he has enjoyed listening.
I think it's Kester.
Well, in Dutch, it would be Kuster. So yeah, Kester sounds more Americanized. I hit him in the mouth about a year ago, and he has enjoyed listening to your show while working nights in Brownwood, Texas. Around New Year's, Brian was diagnosed with a terminal tumor on his spinal cord and given 4 months to live. This is not a dynamite note. This is depressing now. This is not good. Even though he isn't able to do many of the things he once enjoyed, he still listens to his podcast, and we get a kick out of your show, especially throwing down the lingo around unsuspecting normie relatives. I bet you do. You are adding incredible value to his time. Thank you for your show and the work you put into it. Asking for prayers from all the non-pagans, JK, in the Gitmo Nation for Brian. He's on my list. Please knight him Sir Turbo Brian of the infamous compliments and give him steak so rare it only has a chance to look at the oven in terror before being served. And Mountain Dew, of course. I love that. And Mountain Dew, of course, at the round table. Can we get an F cancer and an R2-D2 karma? You bet.
You've got karma.
Sir Anonymous, Sir Anonymous, the Viscount of the ADFC and Arapahoe County, comes in with 36999. He actually sent in a check and a note. And that's proof that I have a note.
It's a note. We have a note.
So he also says at the beginning, thank you for your courage and your continued deconstruction. It's been far too long since my last tithing. Please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
He doesn't want any jingles or karma, but he says about this donation, the 36999 is something I like to call the triple intel threat.
No.
Or treat. The triple intel treat. That's treat, not threat.
Got it.
As I've donated this amount before, a brief explanation may suffice. It's a relation to EO12333, EO, which is Executive Order 12333.
Yes, yes, I've heard of
it. Some of the No Agenda spooks may know what it is, but it comes in many forms, and it has special meaning to the numerologist among us. Here you have the power of three in many forms, 123.33 times 3, 369.99. Perhaps you notice that 369.99 equals 3, followed by 6, which is 3 and 3, followed by 9, which is 3 and 3 and 3, or 3 times 3, ending with 99, which is 3, 33 times 3.
Yes, and at the end, it's George Soros.
As always, I shall remain a faithful proponent and promoter of the No Agenda Show, surreptitiously hitting people in the mouth. I have to be very careful within the walls of my government facility, where everyone is literally a you-know-what.
Douchebag.
A spook. He needs a spook. Yeah, but we need a spook. No jingles, no karma.
I don't think we have a spook yell.
We don't have a spook yell. We should get one.
We need one, yes.
And so thank you very much.
Cody Osborne is in Elgin, Illinois, $350.93. In the morning, gentlemen, I've been listening for about 2 months since my cousin Ian hit me in the mouth, and I've been backtracking, checked, and I'm exactly 333 episodes back. That's got to be a sign. We'll kick in what I can for now. Thanks for your courage. Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
I'm sorry. I was looking at the back of our spook's note. James Morin in Jackson, California. Jackson, up in the hill country there. Our hill country. This foothills. 333.33. No notes, just karma.
Got it.
You've got karma.
Sir Jeff, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, 333.33. In the morning, he says, with this donation, I move from a tiny baron to a full baron. In addition to the new title, Sir Jeff Baron of PA Route 33, I'd like to request from the Peerage Committee a small parcel of surrounding Pennsylvania Route 33. This parcel is bordered on the west by Interstate 476, on the east by the Delaware River, on the north by Interstate 80, and the south by Interstate 78. Do we have a plat? Have we checked?
I think that's fine. Yes. I'd like to know why,
It's probably some well-known building, and he's laughing his butt off.
Maybe.
I also appreciate the Rubbalizer and 33 is the magic number jingles. Thank you for your courage. Sir Jeff of PA Route 33.
India, Tango, Mike, stand by. 33. Rubbalizer out.
33. It's the magic number. Well, Ray Salmon comes in from Madison, New Jersey with 33333.33. So he's right in the same click. And he sent a note in with a check. And to prove it, I can shake the piece of paper.
Yeah, it's real.
It's been a while since I've donated, so please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
I'm sharing some of the year-end treasure provided to me by my employer. I appreciate all the hard work that goes into each show. Please provide some dog karma for all.
All right. We move on to Chap Williams, also in the 333.33 club. No note that I have seen, so we'll give him a double up karma.
You've got double up karma.
Sir Farmer Todd from Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, 333. Not the 33. The other day while I was playing, he writes, the other day while I was playing Royal Match, I won 33 golden coins. Ooh. I knew it was time to donate again. Also, starting today, the NCAA wrestling tourney begins. 10 brackets with 33 men per bracket.
Oh, no.
Penn State will win again, by the way. Cheers, Sir Farmer Todd.
Thank you, Farmer Todd. You've been around for a long time, Sir Farmer Todd. Todd has. Jeffrey Weber, or Weber, Osage, Iowa, 263.22. And he doesn't have a note, so we give him a double up karma.
You've got double up karma.
And next on the list from the country of the Netherlands, Wageningen, to be exact, Jappe Franke, $210.60. Also no note, so a double up karma for you, Jappe.
You've got double up karma.
I'm going to jump one and go to Linda Lupatkin in Lakewood, Colorado. $200 jobs karma she wants. For a resume she mentions that gets results, she must be doing well with this. Go to imagemakersinc.com with a K. For all your executive and resume job search needs, that's imagemakersinc with a K, K. Or find Linda Lupatkin, Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes on the producer list.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You thought.
Also coming in, well, this is 201.33. The 33s are everywhere today. Gigawatt Coffee Roasters from Bensonville, Illinois. And Gigawatt says, spring is here. And for that, can I get a little girl yay and a boom shakalaka?
Yay!
For producers looking to enjoy a crisp spring morning with a fine cup of coffee, visit gigawattcoffeeroasters.com and use code ITM20 at checkout for a 20% discount on your first order. Stay caffeinated, says Eli the coffee guy. Thank you, brother.
Sir Chansey in New York City, $200. ITM gents from Sir Chansey of the Netherworld and ITM to the folks of the New York City meetup. Can I get a fear is freedom and some jobs karma? Thank you much.
Fear is freedom. Subjugation is liberation. Contradiction is truth. Those are the facts of this world. And you will all surrender to them. You pigs in human clothing.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You got karma.
Man, I haven't heard the Marching Pigs' Fears Freedom in a long time. Glad someone requested that again. And our final associate executive producer is Ethan Reinke, I'm going to say, Overland Park, Kansas. 200, thank you for all the work you both do.
I think it's Reinke.
No, that's what you think.
That's what I'm thinking.
Reinke. Thank you for all the work you both do. I'm long past due to start my journey to knighthood. I've been listening to No Agenda since 2020, and the value received far exceeds what has been donated. No, it's, if it's what you can donate, then it is right on the money. I came for Adam. I stayed for John. No jingle. He's a dirty old man. No jingles, but could use some marriage and house buying karma. Well, we'll hand that to you. Thank you for your support.
You've got karma.
And that does wrap up our executive and associate executive producers for episode 1644. We are just rocking along with the numbers. We want to thank everybody in advance who comes in under $50. We noticed, by the way, John, you had some of the it's like the 5133. Somehow, if someone does 49.99 and pays for the fees, then it hits up above the 50.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that may not be what they want. So people,
well, they shouldn't do it.
That's what I'm thinking too. We appreciate all those people, of course, and everyone who's on sustaining donations, which you can find at noagendadonations.com, dvorak.org/NA for you old schoolers, and take a look and you can see exactly how you can support the show ongoing. And John's going to take us through to the 50s.
Starting with Nathan Cochran in Franklin, Tennessee, 12345.
He's a knight. His knight name. You mention your knight name next time, Nathan.
Put it in the notes.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, we had somebody complaining bitterly. But they didn't put it in the notes. Belinda, we don't remember these things off the top of our head. There's 1,000 knights, so we just can't. We're not that bright. Belinda Schroyers.
I think Schroyers.
Schroyers, that's a good way to pronounce it. In Devon Meadows, Australia, 12345. Dan Maley in Fremont, California, 113. And now we have a long note from Greg Speed, who is Ashland Speed's dad in Mansfield, Texas, 10641.
I don't mind reading this real quick because she is part of the No Agenda Racing team. No Agenda logo displayed proudly on her car. This weekend is Ashland Speed's first race in the F1600 with Team Race Dog. I think she did a track record with that car, which is, she doesn't own the car, but she's driver for it, and she did.
She's fast.
She's very fast.
Hence the name Speed.
The official No Agenda racer has been signed for the year. Oh, yeah, there's the good news. I hit the team owner in the mouth, and he's letting us put the No Agenda logo on the new car. This is awesome. I said it, awesome. Any No Agenda producers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area should come out to the gorgeous Eagles Canyon Raceway in Decatur to see a race and visit us in the upper pits. If you announce yourself with an in the morning, we'll know you're not some weirdo. Hey, this is like an invitation to the pits, man.
Or cool. Just the opposite.
Check her socials for the full schedule at Ashland with a Y, Ashland Speed. She races at 3:30 on Saturday and 3 o'clock on Sunday, but come out early to hang out. Admission is free. Bar and grill on site will even let your kiddos, oops, your kid, sit in the car and take a picture. Oh, and please let Linda Lupatkin know that an Image Makers Inc. logo would look really good on the side of the race car. Love you guys. And he says, could I just have a just send your cash from George Bush?
I know a lot of people want to send blankets or water. Just send your cash.
Very expensive to be in the racing business. We're very proud to be a part of Ashland's story.
Yes, cars cost money and they fall apart.
And we're proud to be a part of her story. It's a beautiful, you know, I can see her one day on the podium, Indy, if not Indy, F1.
And then mentioning No Agenda, because these racers are trained to mention every sponsor, their car name, before they even say hello.
Exactly.
If you ever listen to one of them, and then, blah, 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 blah. I can't even do it how good they do it.
Oh, we got
or just, how well just, they do it. I'm sorry.
I just got a message.
Spoke!
There it is. Fletcher on the fly. Nice one, Fletch.
You can do it. Brian Lillard in Prosper, Texas, 8888. Kevin McLaughlin, there he is, 8008. 1644 boob donation.
Nice.
8008. Okay. Randall Myers in Gainesville, Virginia, 8008. He donated because of the sad puppy, which continues. Kat Morton in Charlotte, North Carolina, 7450. Dad's got a birthday. We got it. Alexander McMahon and Castliger, BC. Yes. I'm not sure. Which is $70.26, which is
It's $85.
$5.
But it's from the
Canadian.
It's from the Mountains and Rivers Meetup to support the show and save Alan Lawton from being a douchebag.
You've been de-douched.
Thank you.
Sir Rick in Arlington, Washington, 6996. Rin Fakima in Seattle, 6969, dudes. Sir Chris Abraham in Arlington, Virginia, 6363. Not a spook.
Spook! It comes in handy today.
Jeez. Sir Kevin O'Brien in Chicago, Illinois, 6006. Les Tarkowski in Kingman, Arizona, 58. Preston Isaacson, 5623. Dean Roker, 5510. Greg O'Neill, who's got a birthday for somebody. He's a de-douching, 510.
You've been de-douched.
He's a 5510. So Ethan Moss at 5326. Andrew Benz in Imperial, Missouri, 5005. And now we get to the 50s, and there's a bunch of them. Including our, we mentioned earlier, our knighting of Gramps.
Yes.
And we discussed that. So that is a donation from, unfortunately, it blows out my spreadsheet. So
it's from Ryan Norton. And he just wanted us to mention his Sir Higgins Instagram page, which is still up, quarantine_chats_with_Gramps. Or search for Richard Higgins Pearl Harbor Survivor on YouTube. There's a lot of stories there. It's apparently quite good.
Nicholas Rudowich in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. Christopher Hodges in Union, Mississippi. Here you
skipped a whole bunch at the top.
I don't have any. The spreadsheet is not Andrew giving me Benz, any of those.
Imperial, Missouri. Scott Lavender, Montgomery, Texas. Corey Bennett, Denver, Colorado. Gadget Freak 10, Western Springs, Illinois. Luke Olson, Alexandria, Virginia. Chris Cowan, Austin, Texas. Andrew Gusek, I think that's Sir, Greensboro, North Carolina. Matt Ealingworth in Montclair, New Jersey, my old hood. Cynthia Kirk from Placerville, California. And she wants a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Did you get Gadget Freak?
I did.
Okay, Nicholas Rudowich. Christopher Hodges in Union, Mississippi, and we got it back to Ethan Reinke in Overland Park, Kansas. This is another Matt Higginbotham for the de-douching and executive producership on show 1628 wants to thank him.
You've been de-douched.
He gets a de-douching. Everybody gets a de-douching.
Everyone gets a de-douching today.
You get a de-douching. You get a de-douching. And Alan Bean in Beaverton, Oregon is back, 50. Dan and Tracy Sullivan in Tinley Park, Illinois. Leanne Shipley in Covington, Washington. And last on our list, not a really big list, actually, but it's good old Sir Jerry Wingenroth in Saugus, California. I want to thank these people for helping get show 1644 off the ground and produced.
And thank you again to everyone who came in under the $50. Thank you again to our executive and associate executive producers for episode 1644. You really brought it home. We appreciate you. Thank you for support the No Agenda Show.
Our formula is this: we go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Become a producer at noagendadonations.com.
Title changes, turning faceless slaves.
And we have one title change today, which we'd like to hit right off the bat. Sir Jeff has donated an additional amount of $1,000, put together. And so today he becomes Sir Jeff Baron of Pennsylvania, Route 33, and he has that new parcel of land under his protection. We thank you very much, sir.
It's your birthday.
Here is our birthday list. Remember, we don't actually have a calendar or a list. You got to email us evening before the show so you can get on the list. Sir Andy says, happy birthday, Dame Kylie of the Double D Cups. She turned 50 yesterday. Mitchell Reeves, happy birthday to Winnie Reeves, his daughter. She turns 2 today. Greg O'Neill turns 46 today. Dave Basor wishes his daughter, Sarah, a very happy one. She turns 16, sweet 16 tomorrow. Good luck with that, Dave. Kat Morton turns 50 on March 23rd. Thank you very much. And Dave Basor wishes his son, Joshua, happy birthday. He turns 25 on March 24th. There you go. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. And we do have one condom, one nighting. So I have my one night blade out there. And
here you go.
Wow. Oh, sorry. I cut myself. There we go. Brian. Here we go, Brian. We're with you, brother. Prayers are up. You're on the list. Thanks to the support you receive from your family, we are very proud to pronounce the Kate to you, and welcome to the roundtable, Sir Turbo Brian of the infamous compliments. Welcome to the roundtable of the No Agenda Knights and Dames. For you, sir, we have Hookers and Blow, Ren Boys and Chardonnay, but also by request, steak so rare, it only has a chance to look at the Evan and Terra before being served, and a Mountain Dew. Along with that, you may enjoy some bong hits and bourbon, sparkling cider and escorts, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pablum, geishas and sake, vodka, manila, Rubenesque women and rosé, and of course the mutton and mead. And we'll get a ring to you if you head over to noagendarings.com. Give us your ring size and an address to send it to. We're very happy to do that. And we will get that out to you along with the wax to seal your important correspondence and, of course, our certificate of authenticity. And welcome to the roundtable. And thank you very much for supporting the No Agenda Show. Time now for our meetups.
No Agenda.
Yeah, we got a big party going on. The road. Rosie the Riveter Day Denver meetup starts at 6:30 Mountain Time at Lincoln's Roadhouse in Denver, Colorado. That's today. Also, this is the third anniversary of the Charlotte's Thirsty Thursday of the month. One day I'll get it right. It was funnier when my teeth fell out doing that. 7 o'clock at Ed's Tavern in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a bunch of good people over there. Tomorrow, the Getway to the Mo, St. Louis Finest Meetup. So it's the Missouri St. Louis Meetup. Venice Cafe, St. Louis, Missouri. On Saturday, the OKC Ooey Hooey Southside Meetup, 2 o'clock at the Garage on I-240, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Central Ohio, you're at St. Patty's Rebound, 3:30 at Dempsey's, Columbus, Ohio, on Saturday. All aboard the Flight of the No Agenda. This is the 50th meetup that Leo Bravo has done in California. It's at the Santa Fe Cafe in Fullerton, California. Join him. That'll be a big celebration, 3:33 p.m. And finally, on Saturday, the 9th Northwest Houston meetup at 5:30 at Wakefield Crowbar, Houston, Texas. Still to come in the month of March, we have Wageningen in the Netherlands on the 26th, Alfred, Georgia on the 28th, Osaka, Japan on the 30th, Reno, Nevada on the 30th. See what else?
Nevada.
Nevada. They confused me. Mimi confused me putting Nevada on there. I thought it was Nevada. It's Nevada. I got it. Those are the meetups. You need to be at one. This is truly the only way to get through these times and the times that are to come, because you all have these different capabilities and all of these different resources. And when you put them all together, you have a community that will save itself no matter what comes down the pike. You cannot spell community without unity. It's always a party. And if you go to a meetup, guaranteed connection, which gives you protection. NoAgendaMeetups.com. If you can't find one there, start one yourself. It is easy.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. Where you won't be triggered or held aflame. You wanna be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
I have way too many ISOs. Way too many. So
let's start. Go get started.
Tick tock.
No, that doesn't work, does it? How about this one?
Yay.
I kind of like that one myself.
It is cute.
He has a podcast. Stone him.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of fun.
I like that one.
And
is there a podcaster on the plane?
I mean, I got some good ones there.
How many? Yeah, more.
No, that's it. That's all I have.
You said you had plenty of them.
That was five.
All right, I got... I don't mind it much better. Let's try freedom.
Freedom.
When freedom calls, we're here to answer.
No, it's too much noise.
Too much noise. Seasonal.
Hmm? Seasonal depression is real.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for your time.
I think I really like.
He has a pod.
Oh, I like this one.
Yay!
I like that one.
No, maybe. I don't like that one.
He has a podcast. Stone him.
How about that one?
That one I'll take.
He has a podcast. Stone him. That's how low we've gotten. That's how low it is. Okay, I'm a little behind on the production here, so let's hit this.
Good news.
I saw on the Mastodon people complaining that the good news segment, that's not good news. You guys don't know what good news.
No, they're complaining about what?
About the good news segment. They think it's...
They don't like the good news?
No, they think that they can do better good news. Send it all to John.
I'd like to see it. Well, here's an example. I think I can do better. And they sent me a 7-minute clip.
They don't understand.
Yeah, it's good news if you want to sit through 7 minutes of yakety yak.
No, that's not good. That's bad news.
Yeah, I agree.
What do you have for today?
I mean, I can cut him down. I'll cut it down from 2 minutes to a minute 50, but I can't cut down 7 minutes.
No. That's not good news. That's bad news. We like good news, particularly if it makes you feel good at the end of the show. You get a warm feeling like you slid out of the No Agenda show into a nice bubble bath. What do you have?
Yeah, and this is an under 2-minute clip about the rescued pit bull, pathetic story, the found in oil. This is a great good news story.
After 587 days living in a kennel, Chester the Pit Bull finally walks out of the Euclid Animal Shelter Monday morning to cheers and tears. It's been a tough road for Chester before and during his time here, but he now has a new leash on life.
Chester was completely skin and bones. The dog couldn't even lay down. He had his paw stuck in a prong collar, and he was a mess. He was a mess. He had to be carried out after a little bit because he could not stand.
August 2022, Chester, who was chained to a window, and three other dogs were found in a vacant house where they had been for more than a week.
He absolutely was so relieved to see people. And to be honest, I don't know how much longer he will have lasted.
For about 10 months, shelter workers treated him for heartworm and mange and helped him gain weight. A year and a half went by and no one adopted him until a special woman came along. And now Chester is on his way to his forever home in a limousine donated by Lake Erie Limo. Minutes later, Chester, about 4 or 5 years old, pulls up to his new home and his new family in North Royalton like a VIP.
Oh my goodness!
It was love at first sight for Lauren Reitzman when a friend sent her an online post of Chester.
He has all these people around him and he's just bopping around to see who he can get love from, you know? So I think I've won the lottery. I think adoption is so important, especially when an animal, I'm not very emotional, an animal's had a really rough start in life, because they deserve it even more.
In North Royalton, Kevin Freeman, Fox 8 News.
This is what we are good at in America. This is what we do, people. We make good news stories that make you choke up. You know, we get local commerce involved with the limo, and we adopt pets, people. We're good people. This is good news, John. Well done.
Good news, everyone.
I'm feeling good after that. How about you?
You should.
I feel dynamite. Dynamite. Very good. Hey, we've got it's a very funny end of show mix. This is Professor Jay Jones checks in from China. We got Steph Jacobson and our brother, Leo LePuke. Two in a row this week. It's good, man. Leo LePuke, you are rocking it, man. Coming right up on the stream, trollroom.io or any of the modern podcast apps, if you're listening there. We have Rare Encounter. The Family Grenade is the title of the episode. Well, that promises something. We are looking forward to all the traffic coming into Fredericksburg for the big eclipse. It's just a couple of weeks away. It's getting exciting. California RVs are showing up as we speak. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas school crunchy, Fredericksburg, Texas, FEMA region number 6. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'm not going to Fredericksburg, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We don't let dirty old men in. That's a whole different story. Remember us at noagendadonations.com until Sunday. Adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
But I'm not a rat. You want to start with a rat?
Let's start with the rat.
As New York's rat problem gets worse by the day.
Oh, what is that in the Mason?
Rat grilling in New York City is getting more popular with migrants. Remember Demolition Man? And people were living underground, they were eating rats.
All right, well, Gordon, you had the rat burger.
All I want's a burger and a beer to get one.
As New York's rat problem gets worse by the day.
And he lived on rat meat for a year and a half.
Demolition Man was a prophecy.
We've got an apple brown rat in here. Ooh, what a dessert.
It's coming
through.
During
the French Revolution, a bunch of rat recipes showed up in the market, and people were eating rats in France.
You want to start with a rat? Rat on your pop?
Ooh, what a dessert.
This is kind of solves a couple of problems.
Just don't ask where the meat comes from.
There's one thing about Lydia is he does not know how properly to cook rats.
This is a rat burger.
Whoa!
know. I'm kind of liking this now.
Let's start with the rat.
But I'm not a rat.
Esta carne es de rata.
And they gave their recipes and told what wine you should have with it and everything. And it's quite true. I really don't know.
Rat on your pops?
Rat grilling in New York City is getting more popular with migrants.
Just don't ask where the meat comes from.
One of the things was rat.
But I'm not a rat.
No, I'm kind of liking this now. But then I hear, and this was new, these things take time to boot up.
It reminds me of, you know, memory, whatever, the memory leaks. Rebooting the router.
Oh, it went off and came back on.
What is this? I got buffer bloat. I gotta reboot the router. Oh, and it works fine now.
I got buffer bloat.
I gotta reboot the router. Oh, and it works fine now.
You've gotta jiggle the handle every 21 days?
What was going on that it wasn't working? You know, the router's going every day, and then all of a sudden, you gotta reboot. You should reboot. You always said that.
And sometimes it helped. It was buffer bloat.
Reboot the router. Why? Reboot the router. Do you know that's what it was?
Yeah, that's what we called it. Buffer bloat.
That's what we called it. You know, we don't know what it was.
No. Yeah, buffer bloat.
No, it was helping every time.
Well, we weren't flying to 787, okay? The show is important, but not that important.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Yes, it was in the context of an automobile industry speech, but he knew exactly what he was saying.
He was talking only about the auto industry, and this is one more.
It's just bull. He knew what he was doing. He was talking about a bloodbath. Sometimes a bloodbath means a bloodbath.
It's clear what he meant.
There'll be blood in these streets tonight.
Headlines calling it a, quote, bloodbath.
Be a bloodbath. Not only is it going to be a bloodbath, but after they leave New Hampshire, it's a bloodbath on her home turf. He's left a lot of corpses in his wake. I mean, we can count the bodies. And the headline refers to it as an impending bloodbath.
2018 midterms. In fact, the word bloodbath and massacre come up frequently.
It's going to be a bloodbath.
There's going to be a bloodbath.
Bloodbath.
It's been a bloodbath. They're shaping up to be a bloodbath.
Head off a bloodbath and next year's crucial midterm.
Off-year elections are often a bloodbath.
The Babylon Bee had a great headline. Media reports Trump threatened nuclear war after he says this guacamole is the bomb. Bloodbath! Bloody bloodbath!
Control, right. Exactly what people think. And that is if our job.
Mofo. Dvorak.org/NA.
He has a podcast. Stone him.